don't matter if I lose this fight. It really don't matter if this guy opens my head either. Because all I want to do is go the distance.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 105 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And we've got so much good stuff coming up for you on this episode today.
To kick things off, our main review will be The Predator. So I'm quite excited because, as always, we haven't spoke about it yet.
No.
We haven't.
And I'm intrigued because it's getting a lot of mixed reviews. People are either loving it or hating it. It's like Marmite.
It's very divisive, this one.
Yes.
Our rewatch is going to be the boxing classic starring Sylvester Stallone, Rocky.
Oh, wow.
Adrian.
Yeah, this one is not so divisive.
No.
People tend to fall into one camp on this one, and see if we do.
Yes.
Our topic of conversation are the top three screenwriters. Those people behind the scenes doing all the work, really. And then the director and actor takes all the bloody credit.
It's nice that we're giving them praise.
Yes.
I also feel like we need a chai latte for this one. It's a serious topic.
That's fine.
Which we do very now and then.
I'll brew them up for you.
Wear your beret too.
Talking about brewing up, we'll be masturbating over Oliver Stone.
I don't know how that fits.
Where that was work? The transition?
I don't know. It kind
brewing
of works.
Up.
The hell?
But yes, we'll be masturbating over Oliver Stone and picking our favourite work by that absolute legend of a director.
Good. And we're going to be...
good.
And we're going to be entering round two of our popular... Let's sod it. You know what? It is popular.
Yeah.
A lot of buzz is around it. It's round two of the Actor Factor. It's going to be myself and Mark. Team Jark or Team Gark?
Gark.
Gark, that's it.
Gark is going to take on round one's previous winners. Well, we are the only winners at the moment,
right,
Ben.
Yeah.
So we're going to see if myself and Mark can beat that score.
It would be tough.
What was it, 15 each last time?
It was 15 apiece.
Yeah.
That's bloody good.
I'm going to be carrying him like a heavy bag.
We shall see. And of course, we'll have all the other usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We're going to give away some amazing prizes as per. And we will also give you our pop culture recommendations of the week at the back end of the show. Before we move on to today's topics, though, I want to reiterate the fact that we've got a bit of a competition going on, haven't we, guys?
Yes.
Competition.
Yes. We've got a competition for one of you out there in listener land to design for us a brand new logo. Imagine that. You design it, we will use it. We will put it on all of our merchandise. We will put it on all of our social media accounts. When you go and download the episode from iTunes, you will see your logo there.
It's pretty good.
It's huge. And we've had a lot of entries so far. But we've got another couple of weeks, so I want to see more and more. And the level of stuff is great. I'm loving seeing them all. And people are just going and trying new things, and I'm loving it all. So just keep them coming.
Keep them coming, yeah. The deadline for entries is Friday, October the 5th. We will then reveal the winner on episode 106. So if you want to get your entries into us on Twitter at STTE Podcast, on Facebook, facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast, or via email podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. When you send us your entries via social media, please do use the hashtag STTE logo so that we can find them.
It's easier that way, isn't it?
Hell of a lot easier.
Yeah.
Before we get into stuff, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts these last few weeks. You know, when you just got a bit more time and you just got to see what the competition's like.
Competition!
The competition!
I do get quite annoyed when there's shameless plugging. So I love Jericho. I love Jericho.
We'd never do that.
Who would do that?
I love Kevin Smith. I genuinely love these podcasts, but they just start plugging underwear and stuff out of context. But do you notice it's getting a bit kind of cold out there, a bit nippy?
Oh, yeah. It's Baltic.
Gemma, it's definitely nippy where you are, but you can see.
Brilliant.
Eyes up here.
But it is, isn't it? There's a chill in the air. And it makes me think of what's festive, what's kind of autumn, and I sort of think toffee apple cider from Brothers.
Yeah,
beautiful.
So they've just launched these small little cans.
Oh yeah.
Because sometimes when you're driving or you know you're out and about and you don't want a full bottle, you just want a small little can.
Definitely when you're not driving.
Not when you're driving. We don't ever recommend that.
But Ben and Gemma and myself, Brothers have sent us some toffee apple cans. And if you look at them, they're like
they're awesome.
The perfect size.
Do you know what these make me think of, Mark? I think these would be brilliant to drink on maybe, say, Halloween or perhaps even bonfire night.
That would be beautiful. Yeah. That's what I think of. Like, toffee apple is the one, isn't it? When you think of winter and autumn and that's what I want. So. Yeah, and also...
He's got more!
I was in Aldi earlier today.
Where's that?
That's Aldi. And everyone loves a penguin, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
Everyone.
Can't get pick up a penguin.
So I kind of picked up a penguin, but I picked up a seal bar.
Seal?
And it's blatantly not a rip-off. So I thought, instead of eating Haribo, because they didn't send us anything, Aldi are probably going to give us... So here you are,
thank
a seal
you.
Bar each.
Oh, with a kiss from a rose.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, so I thought we could seal the intro of this episode off. There's no jokes on the wrappers, so it's not completely plagiarising them.
I don't want it then.
But I just thought we could eat some seals, drink some cider, and not plug anything. You know what I mean? It's not what we're about.
Fair enough.
Where do we go from here, dude?
Oh, before it descends into absolute anarchy, let's get started. Topic of conversation this time round: top three screenwriters. As you know, I like to give a bit of love to those people who are somewhat forgotten within movie making. We did a topic similar to this for cinematographers a few episodes ago. So this time round, as I've said in the past, scriptwriters tend to be forgotten because film is an actor and a director's medium. They get all the plaudits. They're the famous ones, the rich ones. Screenwriters, not so much. So I wanted to give them a little bit of love. So Gemma, I'm going to throw this out to you first. Who is your first screenwriter?
Go big or go home, Quentin Tarantino.
I've got it too.
What a surprise. I'm going to leave the room and come back in 20 minutes.
He is, of course, known for Pulp Fiction, Inglourious Basterds and Django Unchained, to name a few. And I believe, in my opinion, he revived a new breed of films, and he's clearly a huge pioneer post-mid-1990s. He brought this level of cool in his storytelling, and it almost came across as fearless and unrestrained. And his work is clearly from the perspective of someone who is in love with films. Mm-hmm. You think you watch Kill Bill 1, Kung Fu movies, Kill Bill 2, Spaghetti Westerns, and along with The Hateful Eight, which I'm not really going to mention too much about. But he writes films that have been influenced by movies, but he brings this edge that had yet to be seen. His knowledge of pop culture is vast and unfound, and it amplifies it to a new audience that watches his films. You think about Pulp Fiction. I think that's probably the best example that I can think of his screenwriting work. It's a series of characters talking about random subjects. It's not necessarily about the film's arc. Mm. They're talking about what people call McDonald's and Burger King dishes in Europe, or talking about a cancelled TV pilot show about kick-ass female heroes. He is, without a shadow of a doubt, one of the most influential screenwriters as well as directors. But to hell with it. He's fucking cool. Ben, what do you think?
I agree with you entirely, everything you've said there. The reason why Tarantino stands out so much for me with his scriptwriting is because he puts an emphasis on character building as opposed to plot. Mm-hmm. It's less about plot and more about characters. A couple of great examples of that. Gemma, you've hit on one of them there. So think of Vincent and Jules in the car talking about Royale with cheese.
Yeah.
That's nothing to do with the plot. It doesn't affect the plot of Pulp Fiction one iota, but it gives you an insight into who these people are. It gives you an insight into their relationship and their chemistry. And another perfect scene that sums up his style is the opening scene of Reservoir Dogs.
Oh my God,
when you've got all the guys sat around the table in the diner and they're talking about the meaning behind Madonna's Like a Virgin,
yeah,
or they're talking about tipping etiquette. And again, it doesn't further the plot in any way, shape or form, but we learn about the power dynamics of this group. We learn that Mr. Pink is a cheapskate, and it involves you more in the plot indirectly because you care more about the characters. Think about any film you've ever seen. Any film that you love, it's because you care about the characters. Mm-hmm. If you don't give a shit about them, if the characters aren't given time to breathe or grow, why would you be invested in the story that they're part of?
Yeah, like The Room.
Like, obviously. And Tarantino is so goddamn strong at that. I think that's what drew me to him initially, the fact that he emphasises character over plot, because I'd never really seen anything like that when I first started watching his work in the mid-90s. But beyond that, he's also capable of writing really powerful and dramatic speeches. Like, think of Calvin Candy's speech around the dinner table in Django Unchained, you know, when he cracks the skull,
yeah,
exactly, yeah. Or think about when Bill in Kill Bill kills the bride and he says to her that you're seeing me at my most masochistic,
yes,
and then boom, shoots her in the head. He just writes these powerful, kick-ass, cool speeches, and he's a master of bringing all the bits together. You can have these splintered narratives and you're thinking, how the fuck is this going to coalesce into something? But he always manages to pull it together at the very end. Best examples for that being Pulp Fiction and I would say Inglourious Basterds.
Absolutely.
Too. I think he's the greatest of all time. I think he's a master.
Hell yeah.
You've gone too big already. Yeah. This should have been your third choice because there's nothing else to say.
but when you're talking about screenwriters, he's always on the top of the pile.
By a mile.
Mm-hmm. Oh, round. Well done.
There we go.
Nothing to say, Mark?
I can't. You two have just absolutely waxed lyrical perfectly. Anything I say now will just sound stupid.
I like him because he's on the movies.
Exactly. There's no point. You two have just absolutely nailed it. But I agree. I haven't got him, but I knew that you'd both have him. It's the one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mine might be one of Ben's as well. Aaron Sorkin.
No. Oh. I did consider him, though.
Yes. The reason I like him so much is there's a rule of thumb that basically one page usually counts for 1 minute of screen time. Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at this guy of his actual work, for give an example here, Steve Jobs was 190 pages. Social Network was 178 pages. These films aren't that mind-blowing. If you actually think of the Steve Jobs film, it's not that great. Mm. It's all right.
Yeah.
Moneyball, it's an all right film. A Few Good Men, it's an all right film. But for some reason, he, when he delivers his... And it is kind of a Sorkin-esque style.
Yeah.
I always know it's him. And I don't want to talk about TV too much because this is a film podcast. But The Newsroom, everything he writes, I'm gripped. Mm-hmm. I can't take my eyes off this person delivering these lines. And I don't know why, but I always think, I know this is Aaron Sorkin. That's the feel I get. And I think the best example is Moneyball. I'm gripped to everything that's happening. Jonas Hill, one of your favourites.
You know what I mean?
one of the best back in the day. I love his acting, but for some reason, Sorkin got a completely different character out of him. I saw this really serious side. And then from that, we've now seen him cast in more serious roles with Scorsese and stuff like this. But he's amazing. The way he writes is absolutely fantastic. And he turns an average film into a fantastic film with the delivery of his scripts that he's writing. It is all down to him. It's not about the direction or the big CGI, because these are films all about dialogue. Yeah. And I think he's up there. Not as good as Tarantino, but I believe that he always delivers a solid script where the monologue and everything just works and keeps you enticed for the whole two-hour film. And if you told me about a Steve Jobs film, I wouldn't be interested. You tell me a film about baseball, you know, I'm not that interested, dude. I'm not. It's all right. I'll give it a go. But when I watch them, I fucking love them. And I realise it's because of his writing.
Yeah, all of his scripts are hyper-wordy, hyper-literate. He's a highly intelligent man, and that always comes through in the work.
That's probably why I like it. Yeah, of course. I can relate to it so much. But it's true. You're a massive fan, aren't you, Ben?
Yes, very much so. And, you know, you mentioned his TV work. I always thought that The Newsroom was a bit too up itself, but the scripts were great. Yeah. The writing style was brilliant. And when you write in the manner that he does... Not every actor is capable of delivering his dialogue. You kind of have to be on his wavelength. You have to be something of a motor mouth. That's why I think Jesse Eisenberg was absolutely perfect for The Social Network. He was able to do that rapid-fire, rat-a-tat dialogue that not all actors can get on board with.
And the first example I think of is The Social Network, when you see Jesse Eisenberg and Rooney Mara go through the breakup towards the start of the film.
Yeah.
And their conversation, the way how they interact with each other is so, like, quick-fire. Mm. And you're right, it has to be the right type of people delivering those lines. And even it was like a 2 minute scene, but it just perfectly encapsulates how Aaron Sorkin writes, and of course The West Wing.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, just to, you know, I've never seen all that. I still haven't.
It's shocking. Absolutely incredible. Martin Sheen as President Bartlett should have been real. Never mind.
We've gone very big already.
Yeah. We have.
It's back around to you then, Gemma.
Hello. Okay, Charlie Kaufman.
I've got it too.
Let Ben talk about this.
Go on, Ben, you go for it, mate.
All right, then. So the thing I love about Charlie Kaufman is that he doesn't seem interested in writing straightforward films. Everything he does is aggressively weird. So consider this. Being John Malkovich is about a guy who finds a portal into the mind of John Malkovich. Adaptation is about a character called Charlie Kaufman, played by Nicolas Cage, who also plays his fictional twin brother Donald. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is about a technology that can erase painful memories. Synecdoche, New York is about a man who creates an entire fake city inside a warehouse. And Animalisa is about a puppet having a midlife crisis. Right? This is Charlie Kaufman in a nutshell, man. The guy is a fucking loon. He's so inventive and unpredictable that even though I don't necessarily even like all of his films, I always look forward to the next one because you just don't know what you're going to get. His mind is totally unfettered by the laws of science or logic or reason or basic scriptwriting principles, but he always manages to pull out these fucking bizarre and out there screenplays. There's no one like him, and I can't wait to see what he does next.
I know. Animalisa too. I thought it was an above average film. I really enjoyed it, but I didn't think it was going to be making my top film of that particular year. But he has a wonderful knack of creating tragedy and irony and pain and heartbreak and love and loss. It's so different to what is out there in cinema. He brings this dream world into a reality that twists you into humor, hysterics, and it actually questions every little life decision you've ever made in your life. Watch Animalisa, watch Eternal Sunshine. Mm-hmm. If you were given the chance, would you want to erase every single bit of pain associated with either a human or an animal? Would you want to do that if the choice was given to you on the table?
Are you actually asking me now?
Yeah. Do you want? Do you want
yes,
it?
Yes, I can I maybe. Do.
I can maybe arrange something.
Yes, please do.
But he's a one of a kind writer who has such an individualistic approach that's hard for anybody to imitate. There is nobody else out there that comes up with these outlandish ideas for people to pay their money and sit in a cinema to watch for an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours. Who do you know that does that? Mm. And that is a question. Who do you know anyone?
You're asking me too many questions.
No.
What I will say about him is sometimes they're a bit too raw, they're a bit close to the bones, so the delivery of the lines are too truthful and it mm-hmm. makes you question too much. So when you're watching his films, you can't just have a beer and pizza and watch any of his films. The ones Ben has just described there, all of them make you go for an emotional roller coaster and you usually feel lost and absolutely heartbroken by the end of his films. They're too much sometimes and you've got to be in the right mood. And when you picked Eternal Sunshine, I was like, cool, cool. Then when I watched it, I was like, fuck my life. When we did Animal Eve, I was like, fuck my life. I'm going to have a midlife and be a puppet soon. It's fucking scary shit.
But being John Malkovich, I think that's probably one of the most humorous films that he's done, an adaptation to.
Nicolas Cage in that is unbelievable.
So good.
Nicolas Cage being Nicolas Cage being Charlie Kaufman.
Yeah.
Mental.
Sold.
Mental.
Yeah. Are you going to pick his third one and fuck him off completely
today?
I've
got a feeling she might. I wouldn't be surprised if she did
based
on what I've
got. We'll split that 50-50, don't worry.
My next one is a big one from the 90s. It's got to be John Hughes.
Oh, good show.
This man is one of my favourites because he's given me the character. So you talked about Quentin Tarantino giving you characters and no one else does. John Hughes does. Think of some of the early films. The Breakfast Club, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Home Alone, Uncle Buck. It's all about the lovable family characters or those people at school or college that you absolutely loved. He doesn't really write about characters that you want to hate. You love them all. Think of Home Alone. Think of Ferris Bueller. They're such cool people that you want to be. You want to relate and do what they do. And that's because of the way he writes his stories. They're always good family fun films. You're not going to put this on and offend anyone. Those films aren't going to upset your nan or your younger brother that you might have not had or whatever it is. Oh, no, it's a son I've not got. That's what
it
was.
Has this become like long lost family all of a sudden?
Suddenly at the door, Cilla Black. Surprise, no, surprise.
She's but it is a dead.
Yeah, yeah. She's not dead. She's dead. But yes, these films are absolutely fantastic. And I always think of his dialogue and stuff and the characters. And I think he's as good as Tarantino for giving us characters. Not ones that stay with you forever, but lovable characters. Maybe not as good as, but not far from.
I mean, it's an opinion.
But he's also done a lot of family but he's also done a lot of family classics. So we've got Beethoven, Miracle on 34th Street. All of those were written by him as well, not just directed.
Yeah. Did he write the first National Lampoon's Vacation?
He did.
As well? Yeah.
Yes.
Great
love,
film.
Love, love.
That's definitely got to be a rewatch at some point.
Heck yes.
But I think my favourite's got to be Uncle Buck. I wanted Uncle Buck in my life. Those lines that John Candy gives, absolutely brilliant. And I miss him. I do realise how much I miss that guy in films.
Yeah.
More than anyone.
I also want a massive pancake.
Oh. On your birthday, I'm going to wake you up. That'd be a bit weird.
How did you get
why are you in my house? We moved house for a reason. Yeah. And we'll have this massive pancake. And I'll just wake you up just shoveling it. That'd be awesome. That's what you want.
I don't know.
is that what you want?
Why is there blood on the shovel? Yeah.
Can I file a police report?
And Ferris Bueller, be honest.
Yeah,
Ferris
awesome.
Bueller's lines, all of them. Absolutely. Bueller. But amazing. And if you ever feel bad, the opposite of Kaufman, if you ever feel bad, put on a John Hughes film because you'll feel loved, you'll feel like everything's good again and you don't need to worry about anything in the world.
It's been a bit annoying recently because I've seen some critics do critical reappraisals of his work.
Yeah.
And they've been basically saying that, you know, some of his characters are a bit racist or some of his characters are a bit sleazy.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, that may very well be true, but you can't judge things by 2018 standards when they were made in the 1980s or whatever. Judge it on its own merits. Judge it what it was like then. No one was up in arms about it then. Yes, we probably wouldn't make them in this way now, but that's not a reason to throw them in the bin and not enjoy them anymore.
Have you heard the latest about
apparently
all Adam Sandler's earlier films in the 90s are too aggressive?
Oh, really?
I mean, come on. Just
tap it. Just tap it.
Tap it.
Oh, yeah, that offends me.
Why would he be so angry?
People
are
ruining everything. Like, genuinely, if you're getting upset by The Breakfast Club in 1985, over 30 years ago, and it's upsetting, you know, about some of the characters or the sexist or the racism, fuck off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I hope that offends you as well, that me saying fuck off about it. And, you know, it's just not worth getting upset about.
People are just too fucking soft these days, man. Too soft.
Soft lads.
Soft lads, all of them.
Right, Gemma, you're going to reveal Ben's third one as well now and completely shit on him?
I feel like we probably have to say this at the same time, but my third choice, it's not a singular person.
Oh, cheating.
So we know who it
is. It's a double act.
Oh, right, we know.
I've not got it, though.
Oh, okay. Good. Stolen Ethan Coen.
Nice.
I did have him in my shortlist at one point. I'm glad I changed.
Yes, it's two people, but I see it as one body of work. And yeah. They're responsible for such amazing pieces of work like Fargo, No Country for Old Men, and The Big Lebowski. And people recognise them mostly for directing, but they do tend to write their own films. And they know how to write about a range of subjects from dark thrillers to ironic comedy. And you mentioned this about Tarantino, but they are so clever and so intelligent about creating characters that fascinate the viewer. For example, one of my favourite characters of all time, Marge Gunderson.
Yes.
On face value, she's going to be the cop in charge of a kidnapping slash murder case, and you just expect her to get the job done and solve it. However, she unravels herself to be a very classy, committed and determined cop who is the personification of good moral values. And this can be the same said for a lot of their characters. They go beyond motivations of characters, yet it makes it clear to the audience that they are locked in the cinematic experience, and that's all it is. It's not supposed to be relatable to real life. Look at Miller's Crossing, Barton Fink. This is not stories that happen in your everyday occurrence. Mm. It is purely down to such cinematic values that it makes them so exciting to see whenever a new project is announced. I think we've got a new one coming up that was announced as a surprise a few months ago. The name eludes me, but apparently it's going to be very good. But they're just so iconic. You know what the Coen brothers are all about, but what it is, it's a bit of a mixed bag. You don't know whether or not you're going to get dark or you're going to get light.
Yeah, and whether you get the dark or the light, there's always a heavy dose of humour in there. Even in their darker scripts, there's always a healthy dose of dark comedy. Mm-hmm. I love all of their work. You know, instantly I'm thinking about No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
And True Grit.
Yeah. Oh, God damn.
I just think of Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
It's just so good. But they've got such range. You can cry, you can laugh, you can... That sounds like... Is it Tommy Wiseau? You can laugh, you can cry. No, what's he saying?
What are you talking about?
I don't know. I'm drunk, I think. But yes, I
think you need to stop having all those seal bars, mate.
I know. I prefer their humour to their serious side, even though we get Fargo's off. But even when it's the scene where you're not supposed to laugh, you do. Mm-hmm. And that's for powerful writing. But... they have to come as a duo.
They do.
I saw some social media come back as one, and I was like, hang on a minute. Yeah. Like, no, they come as two. You can't single one out.
Yeah, I think in their early days, they used to take it in turns, one of them to be credited as the writer, one of them to be credited as the director, because the Directors Guild of America has very stupid rules that they didn't used to let duos be put up as directors together. But they always, in fact, wrote and directed together. Mm-hmm. So in recent years, their credits have reflected that, so I can understand why some people might have singled out one if they've gone by IMDb, but they're always involved in all parts of it.
Yeah. Truly a delightful duo.
Oh, that's a good one to end on.
Thank you.
And you've not had Ben's, which is even better.
No, yay!
My final one, he hasn't done too much, but what he has done, I think he's probably my favourite screenwriter of all time, Cameron Crowe.
I knew you were going to have that.
Think of Say Anything. You know, that is instantly one of my favourite films. Jerry Maguire, it's all about the delivery of lines. He gets Tom Cruise actually performing and not running and actually reading a script properly and delivering lines properly.
Does he fall out of a plane or a helicopter? No, I'm not watching it then.
He doesn't run down a street.
Am out.
I know, but he does in Vanilla Sky. You've got a big running scene then, and you get him actually... There's no helicopters in that, which there should be.
Yeah. Cheated.
Almost Famous. We know. Yeah. And Elizabeth Town, one of the best films at the moment. Absolutely awesome. His whole back cat is absolutely outstanding. He did do a shit film a couple of years ago called Aloha, which I haven't watched.
Is that with Emma Stone?
Oh, and they pretty much whitewashed the
She was meant
character.
To be Native American or something, wasn't she? Or
like
Hawaiian or
something. Asian. Just silly.
He's the first screenwriter for me that makes me understand and relate to the most like characters on screen. Almost Famous, you all want to be him. Every delivery of every single line, you just know. Penny Lane, all the characters, the whole Stillwater, everything they kind of to and fro to each other is amazing. I think he gives you characters, like we said, Tarantino does, that you remember forever. You always remember the characters from Almost Famous. You do. Mm. You remember Stillwater. You remember this whole band. You want to be them. You want to be them all. Every single person he introduced to you in a film, you're invested in from the moment they start talking, and that takes a lot of skill. Jerry Maguire is not a great film, but the performances are unbelievable because of the script. Elizabeth Town, the chemistry, and I don't like Orlando Bloom. I don't think he's a great actor. I think he's an average actor. And what's his Mrs. Gordon?
Kirsten Dunst.
Again, not great, sometimes great. Them two together, they shouldn't work. But because of the delivery of the lines and everything that he's written, they are amazing. You watch that film and those two have chemistry like nothing else. And the way they talk is not this stupid Hollywood romance that's fake. They talk like you would to a normal girl, like a real person.
A normal girl.
A real girl.
A real one with boobs and everything. But yes, you actually... you can relate to it. You can be there and think, I've been there. And he does it with power. He does it with grace. And I think it's also the music he adds, but I think his delivery of his lines and everything he writes is some of the best out there.
Yeah.
Good. You're not that invested in him, are you? Because you've seen some of his stuff.
Yeah, I don't care for him, really.
I'm trying to sugarcoat. So you're not that invested.
I find him a bit kind of soppy and saccharine, to be honest.
But it's what you like. And I really like the reasons why you gave it. And I know how much of an influence Almost Famous is. And we had a bloody good time talking about it a few
days. Yeah, I like that one.
A while ago, didn't we?
And I think I was one of the few people on earth that liked the TV show Roadies. I thought that was all right. Yeah, and then it got cancelled after one season.
But he does. He gives you characters you relate to, and that takes a lot. So I'm always going to love him. He hasn't done a lot for a while. He's getting lazy.
Lazy.
Not happy.
Have you mentioned We Bought a Zoo?
I like that film.
You shouldn't be allowed to be on your list. just for calling it that. It's the shittest name for a film ever.
It was his favourite Matt Damon performance.
Yes.
We Bought a Zoo.
Do you know if it was a sequel? We bought a zoo? I thought we bought a zoo too.
No, you idiot.
It would have worked on both levels.
We sold the zoo. Yes.
That's dark.
Come on then, Ben. What's your one that Gemma hasn't pissed on?
Which I genuinely thought you might have had, and it's Hayao Miyazaki.
Oh my God! I'm the worst human in the world.
So, of course, he's the head honcho of Studio Ghibli and a true genius. He has the knack for writing stories that can be enjoyed by all ages. And these days, when we say that, what that tends to mean is it's a kiddie film, but with a few smutty jokes thrown in for adults. But that's not what Miyazaki does. What he does is he writes stories that are beautifully crafted and full of timeless themes so that everyone can enjoy them and take something from them regardless of their age. So, for example, he writes about childhood innocence and wonder in things like My Neighbor Totoro and Ponyo. He writes about identity and coming of age in films like Spirited Away and Kiki's Delivery Service. He writes about environmentalism in Princess Mononoke and Nausicaa in the Valley of the Wind. He writes about pacifism in Howl's Moving Castle and The Wind Rises. It's extraordinary that he can touch upon all these things in what are ostensibly kids' films, but they're not. They're for everybody. His stories are so full of love and loyalty and compassion and bravery and adventure that you can't help but be moved by them and swept up in the narratives. He crafts the most three-dimensional characters that I've seen in animation. I think the only people that come close are Pixar. Pixar are sort of rapping at the door, and they're heavily influenced by Studio Ghibli, but he was the forerunner of doing this in this medium and the true master of it. Even the villains in his films always have believable motivations. They're understandable. They're not just villainous for the sake of it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, perfect.
He's supposedly retired, but apparently he's working on a new film, which is great, because the more he does, the better we are as a people, because he's fantastic.
I've never had the desire to watch a film about raccoons since Pompoko. But Pompoko, that falls into the environmentalism subject. It's so wonderful, and I don't care that I'm a 35-year-old woman who watches these animated films. I do not give one iota of a care. I think it's one of these films that is such a beautiful legacy. And he famously said that he only makes one film a year, or kids should only watch one film a year, hence why he does these wonderful movies. You could pick any single one of these films, and not one of them is shit.
No.
I love that.
Yeah. I want a box set. I keep saying it, but I want him to do... When he actually officially dies, not...
No.
When he officially dies.
He will never die.
Rather than unofficially dies.
There's no way of him coming back.
Unauthorised.
Yeah. I'm back.
I'm sorry. You can't die today. Yeah.
When
get
he's officially gone and they do a final box set, with the other one added in that he's about to bring, on Blu-ray or 4K or whatever's out at that time, or 16K, I want them all. I want that whole box set, because Spirited Away, man.
Oh.
Both of your favourite top 10 films of
top
all time.
Five,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a Studio Ghibli land in Japan that we really need
Skip
to go
trip.
To.
Yeah, because they've got the cat bus. They've got like a damn near life-size cat bus that you can go into.
Oh my God.
I would probably cry and pee my pants at the same time. And that's a sight to behold.
Maybe we do sell out and start plugging loads of stuff randomly so we get the money to go there. Yeah.
We need to get a bit of the bunts to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I need some new underwear. What boxers would you recommend?
Calvin Klein.
Oh, that's good. So many good ones we've talked about today. So many. And we would have had crossover. You knew that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm intrigued. There must be people out there that we didn't mention.
Well, I've got just the remedy for you, Mark.
Remedy.
I've got social media. So we're going to Twitter first. Thomas Young at TomBomb17 said Aaron Sorkin.
Nice.
Alex Garland.
Excellent.
Very good.
Ex Machina and 28 Days Later and the Coen Brothers.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Kairos at Kairos21 said Ernest Lehman. Now, he's responsible for West Side Story and North by Northwest. Mm. William Goldman for All the President's Men, The Princess Bride, to name but a few.
They're two very different films, aren't they, to have been written by the same dude?
Aren't they just?
But remember, he wrote the line, skip to the end.
True.
Yeah.
Hello, Daddy.
He must be a fan.
Yeah. And Nora Ephron, she was responsible for When Harry Met Sally and Sleepless in Seattle.
Nice.
Lee Teasdale at Lee Tinol CFC. It's a weird handle, I gotta say. One. But hey, Lee, how's it going? Lawrence Kasdan for Raiders of the Lost Ark, As Good as It Gets.
Yep,
nice.
Jonathan Nolan, who's responsible for The Dark Knight and Memento, basically a lot of the Nolan films.
Yep.
And Bob Gale, he of Back to the Future trilogy fame.
Ooh. Very good.
Then over to Facebook, Sarah Jane Thomas said Brad Bird. He is behind The Incredibles and Ratatouille.
He's beautiful. Awesome.
He is. Joss Whedon, former Buffy man, but he did Avengers Assemble and Cabin in the Woods, to name but a few. And Terry Gilliam.
Yes.
Yep, big time.
He's done some cracking work on the Monty Python films and Brazil. That has to be a rewatch in the future.
I've not seen it. Never seen it.
Oh, it's so good, man.
Oh, my God. Andrew Dolan said Shane Black. Oh, we're going to be talking about him in a bit. Yeah. Mm. Alex Garland and Scott Frank. I'm surprised. I would have thought Ben would have had this one because he is the man behind Logan and Out of Sight.
Mm. Mm. Logan more than Out of Sight. Ben never talks about Out of Sight.
No. I think I saw it once 20 years ago.
Get him off the air. Always chatting about it. Josh Griffin said Taylor Sheridan. Up and coming Taylor Sheridan.
Yeah, very good. Time, yeah.
He of Sicario and Hella High Water fame. Jonathan Nolan again. And David Webb Peoples.
Yep.
Mm. What's he done?
He's done
Blade Runner, dude.
Yeah.
Hey?
Blade Runner.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Also Unforgiven.
Yeah.
One of your faves.
I am Unforgiven. Mm.
And finally, we're over to Instagram. Nick Random Fish at Nick Random Fish said Kevin Smith.
Shame.
Watch first.
Well,
Ben,
I mean,
Clerks, 37 dicks in a row.
I mean, we all.
You know what I mean?
We all get things wrong sometimes.
You're all about characters.
Fuck off.
James Allen Bob.
And he also said Coen Brothers and George Lucas.
Yeah.
So thank you, everybody, and keep them coming.
So it's a new topic time.
It is a new topic time.
I'm going to jump in. We're on 105 episodes, and I can't believe we've not done this genre. We're going to do our top three rom-coms.
Ooh!
We've been to our local View cinema to see The Predator. That's right, and no, it's not the film about the life story of Ian Watkins. From the outer reaches of space to the small streets of suburbia, the hunt comes home. The universe's most lethal hunters are stronger, smarter, and deadlier than ever before, and they've genetically upgraded themselves from DNA from other species. Gemma, stop laughing. Watkins is not funny, and what he did was wrong. When a boy accidentally triggers their return to Earth, only a ragtag crew of ex-soldiers can prevent the end of the human race. Yeah, I sound like the guy in the trailer. The human race.
I don't know, you sound like you're about to go to the toilet.
In typical skip to the end fashion, we'll be discussing the plot in, well, what plot was there, but we will be discussing it in great detail, and it will contain a number of spoilers, so don't moan, go and see the film, come back, and then look at the timings we spend quite a while putting on there, so you actually do get to come back and avoid any spoilers. Yeah. I don't know where we start with this. All I'm going to do is throw it straight to Ben. Ben, what did you think of The Predator?
It was at the point in the film where a 10-year-old child murdered an innocent bystander with a rocket that I realised what I was watching was pure liquid shit. It is a sloppy, overlong, unfunny, one-dimensional, cliched mess. A horror show.
Wow. Gemma.
This did not need to be made at all. It didn't flow, it didn't connect, it didn't make any sense, and it says a lot when Keegan-Michael Key annoys the shit out of you.
Yeah, ditto.
And the best bit of the whole film was when that kid from Room said the word fuck.
This was badly directed, bad acting, terrible script, no funny jokes at all. I'm sorry, there was not one. It didn't make me laugh. No. An absolute rubbish story, awful, awful CGI, dreadful creature designs. hideous. And you know when you find something in life that you really enjoy? So for me, it's candy floss, okay? Yeah. I fucking love candy floss because when I have candy floss, it takes me back to being a kid.
Okay.
At the fair, in the machine. I'm not talking in a bag,
on
totally.
A stick.
Oh, totally.
I hear
everyone's
you, brother.
Everyone's had it. It's a good thing. Yeah. When I taste it now, it takes me back to being a kid, like this film should with the original Predator of Arnie. Yeah.
Of course.
But sometimes when you go to a shop and you haven't got a fairground and they sell candy floss in a little bag, like when you've got fishes in, why would you do that? Mm-hmm. Why? It's not the same. It's not fresh. It's been around for weeks. It's not the. It's not even warm.
I'm totally with you there.
Why would you stop selling it under the same name? It's not candy floss that I fucking want. It's not warm. It's not sugary. It's not going to flow everywhere, and I'm going to have to play with it. Yeah. It's dead.
Scum. Yes. Subhuman scum.
And that's what this film is. It's the bagged version of something I enjoyed years ago, and now it's just pissed on it. And I'm sorry, I can't find much about this film I enjoy at all. And the difference is, when I taste that candy floss, I can just about think, well, at least it's candy floss. This isn't Predator for me. There's nothing in it that's got leaves me with that sweet taste.
We've run that analogy into the ground. Help me there. I'm not married to the first two films. I know people who like Predator love those first two films, especially the first one. I like them, they're okay, but I don't care that much. So I never went into this one with huge expectations or with that weighing on me. I went in to judge it as a piece of entertainment in its own right, and in its own right, it was fucking terrible. It's not terrible compared to those other ones. I'm sure it is as well, but just in and of itself, it's fucking shit. Everything about it annoyed me. Things like, you know, using a character with Tourette's as comic relief. It's like, are we not past that? Have we not done that
to
death?
That's so funny because I watched it and I could hear people around the auditorium just sort of going, oh, it's funny because he's got Tourette's. And I genuinely thought, this is not funny. This is actually quite, I'm going to say it, it's actually quite offensive.
Yeah.
The guy has a medical condition that he can't help. And the fact it was played for laughs and it didn't even come across as funny, fuck that shit. I'm sorry, but Thomas Jane, I like the guy. Yeah. He's great. My other half freaking loves him.
Yeah.
But Thomas Jane, what on earth are you doing, mate? Just
shouldn't have to.
And that wasn't even the worst bit.
No.
The worst bit was treating autism like it's some sort of evolutionary magic power.
Yes.
It's not. Mm-hmm. And that's fucking offensive.
Yeah.
What the fuck was Black thinking when he wrote this shite?
I don't think he was even thinking.
No, I don't think he was.
Thought that's sweet, sweet moolah.
I'm not sure if he was involved. I'm genuinely, I don't know how you can do Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good films like Lethal Weapon. And then this. I'm sorry, it doesn't seem like there's any bit of him that's in this film. He usually writes good dialogue, really funny scripts that we're all like remembering for years to come. He gives you those characters you love. Look at Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. It's absolute genius. Go back and listen to our rewatch. It's unbelievable. Everything about this film that he did was awful. The script was absolutely embarrassing. God.
It felt like it was so out of place.
Yes.
It didn't feel like it belonged in this universe or in this film.
I don't know what the film was. Honestly, it felt like The Faculty at times with men with Men in Black.
I like Faculty.
Yeah, it's a good
Faculty's
film.
Awesome.
With Men in Black with predator dogs.
Oh, don't get me started.
Started.
The very concept of predator dogs is so fucking stupid anyway. But then they were so poorly rendered. The CGI sucked.
And the fact that they could be trained and all friendly. And
that was ridiculous. Because he basically lobotomized him because he didn't shoot him properly. What the fuck?
That's ridiculous.
Absolute bollocks. But going back to the script, it was so poorly written. And the thing that really, really chafed my hide is when...
That's funnier than anything in the film.
It's when the character of Nebraska said, "Get to the chopper."
Referring to
a motorcycle. Yeah. Do not bastardize Schwarzenegger's best line from the original film. It's one of those things where you just know Shane Black was so satisfied with himself when he wrote it, but it's so fucking cheesy.
Do you think he probably had a cheeky wank afterwards?
Probably.
He was while he was writing it, and then as he came, it's and I heard Ben literally go, that was it. And I thought, he's going to walk out in a minute. Be honest, it was tempting to walk out.
It was,
I really wanted to.
It was really, really poor. And the characters were so thinly drawn. They were just predator bait. They were just there to be eaten and cut up. So think about Alfie Allen's character, right?
Which one was he?
Well, this is my point exactly. What do we know about Alfie Allen's character? He was Irish.
Well.
He had a pack of cards.
Yeah.
He did, didn't he?
But is that a character, being Irish and having some cards? That's literally all we know about him. And then he gets deaded.
Yes. I mean? Will we get a standalone film to get the background
Of
him?
I really hope
Where did he get those cards?
Oh, they tried to do the redemption with Keegan Michael and Key and Thomas Jane when they both shot each other because they knew they were going to be, you know.
They're going to die.
They were going to die. It's like, oh, fuck off.
I want Ben to tell me about more of the characters. I actually can't remember anyone in it.
Olivia Munn, right? I think she was hard done to it. I love Olivia Munn. I think she's a very good actress and she's never been given a vehicle that's worthy of her talents. So in this film, she plays an evolutionary biologist, but she's incredibly handy with an array of assault weaponry.
Isn't she just...
Where's her military training come from when she's a goddamn evolutionary biologist?
She could totally, like, ride on top of the bus and, like, land with no bruises or no cuts or bruises. Yeah, she knew what she was doing.
What's the girl that's from Transformers? Is it Megan Fox? Yes. They've made it basically clone 2 version of her. Uh-huh. The same hair, the same makeup, the same face. Put some tight leggings on, make yourself look quite sexy.
No.
Fuck off.
Like,
genuinely, she was annoying me. And before we went in, Ben was showing me a picture of what she used to look like and now what she looks like. And it's scary. Yeah. Okay, you might have done it to get more work, but if it meant that you got the role in this film, you fucked up, love. Mm-hmm. Go back to the way you used to look, because it's not going to get any better.
It's her face. She can do what she likes. That's her prerogative. But she doesn't look anything now as she used to 10 years ago. It's so different.
And speaking of which, for the lead character played by Boyd Holbrook.
Who?
He was always going to be called Boyd.
See, I like Boyd Holbrook
because
he was in Narcos, and Narcos is a good show. And he was also the villain in Logan, which is a great film. So I dig Boyd Holbrook.
But he was just so bland in this.
Yeah. He was forgetful.
Nothing memorable about him whatsoever.
Originally, in his role, it was going to be Benicio Del Toro, and then he dropped out due to
scheduling.
Yeah, exactly. Good for him.
Scheduling.
Dodged that bullet, didn't he? Jesus Christ. Another one that annoyed me was Yvonne Strahovski, who a lot of people know from Chuck. If you used to watch Chuck a few years back, that was a great show. And she's also the evil bitch in Handmaid's Tale.
Yes. Oh, Serena Joy!
And she was completely wasted in this as just a generic wife character.
Wasn't she?
I don't believe she was ever given a name in the film. I don't think she was referred to as a human being at any
The
point.
Lead's wife.
She's just a wife. What a waste. She was nominated for an Emmy this year, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
And you waste her in this shit. Unbelievable.
Is there anything good in the film? I honestly don't think
the credits, the end credits.
Yes, that was good.
That was my favourite.
Oh, the fight scenes were so poor as well. So the major fight scene in kind of the jungle or whatever it was, like the woods near the end, it was so sloppily edited and so dark that I didn't even realise half the characters had died.
Yeah.
So I didn't notice Sterling K. Brown's character die. And it wasn't until about 10 minutes later I was thinking, where's Sterling K. Brown gone? I was like, oh, he must have died.
Yeah.
And I went and looked on Wikipedia and apparently he like blew himself up or something. I don't remember seeing that because it was so sloppy.
There was a dog that ran away from the field at one point, like not the predator dogs, but the like a proper dog, and it kind of ran towards the screen, but then you didn't really know what had happened to it or why it was running. It was just poorly edited.
It was some of the worst editing I've ever seen in a film, like genuinely. And considering we're like in this year now where a lot of good films are coming out, it shouldn't be this sloppy. Mm-hmm. He's a big name. It's not like his first film. Stuff like, why are the group actually still sticking together? At the point where's the fugitives? What's happened to all these people? Why has this motorcycle suddenly come from nowhere?
Yeah.
Why are these people dead? Like Ben said, where the fuck are these people that have died that we've known from the start that were in this van that we knew they've just died and we don't know how? And stop with these fucking predator dogs. We do need to keep ranting about this. There's no acceptable way of having a dog with dreadlocks. I'm sorry. Even Snoop Dogg's dog doesn't have fucking dreadlocks.
I just realised this whole film has made us like Mark Wahlberg in The Happening. Like, what is this? What's going
it
on?
It is.
What are you? Who are you?
I just sat there literally thinking this isn't his work. It can't be.
And do you know what's astounding? They did focus testing on this film like they do with all films, and the audience so overwhelmingly hated the ending that they went back and reshot it. So bearing in mind, the film we saw is with the better ending.
What
the fuck was the original like then?
Oh
by God.
By God.
By God.
I genuinely don't know then. I want to read and find out.
Yeah, I'd love to know.
God damn.
Fucking hell.
Shower of shit.
I feel better already, by the way.
I feel like I've got it off my chest now. It's been a few days since we've seen this, and I wanted to actually have a good rant.
Yeah.
Should we score it?
Let's score it. I've had enough.
Ben, you went first.
Oh, fuck it. 3?
Yeah?
Why not?
What are you giving it a 3 for? What's the praise?
I've seen worse.
Okay.
So I'm going to give it a 3.
Gemma?
It's like reviving a steak off a plate. 3 out of 10.
Oh, fuck it. Just for mass. 3 out of 10. So the Predator gets a skip to the end. 3 out of 10. It's competition time, which means it's time to give away some awesome prizes.
Prizes.
But also prizes. Announce some prize winners from the last episode.
Prize winners.
If you listened to episode 104 a couple of weeks ago, good episode. I enjoyed it. Nice and short and snappy.
Cracking.
Like a crocodile sandwich.
Ridiculous.
Ridiculous, yes.
When are you becoming the new Gemma?
I don't
know.
Stop it. It is bad.
What's the importance of the sandwich?
I don't know. A crocodile sandwich.
why is bread involved?
Is it because it's snappy?
It's the crocodile that's the snappy element. That's what's the
true.
Bread got to do with it?
That's true. And you can actually eat crocodiles.
We're getting way too much into bread here. What bread would you have?
Hovis.
Yeah, Hovis is good. We gave away some awesome Funkos for Overwatch. Yes, so a big set of Overwatch Funkos, a very good video game. And the question we put out there was, what is everyone's favourite all-time video game? And Paul Schofield's going to win this because The Last of Us, which is a good game. I've never played it, but I've always watched people play it. It looks fucking awesome. But he loves it so much, he called his own son, Joel, and convinced his wife to go through with it for the love of the game.
Wow.
That's pretty sweet.
So I assume that's the main character's name,
yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. So that's pretty damn good. I don't think I'd call my kid Sonic the Hedgehog or Robotnik or whatever it's called.
Dr. Robotnik.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah. That'd be awesome.
I'd call my kid Luigi.
We also had... that's a good name. Earthworm Jim. We also had some Power Rangers Funkos to give away for the 25th anniversary edition set. And there's a set of four. And we said, what was your favourite ever Power Ranger? And Sam Palmer has said... the Red Ranger, and he's actually put a picture of himself up on Twitter with the costume himself.
I saw
in it.
That.
That's
yeah.
pretty cool. If that doesn't deserve a prize, that's I don't know what true. Does. So yeah. the commitment goes yeah. far with Skip yeah. to the End.
Mm-hmm. Nice one, Sam.
So you'll be getting those in the post. I want to see pictures as well. We had a Gremlins pack, which was Greta and the Flasher and a 2-pack vinyl set. And the question we put was,
I'm sorry, I don't know why Flasher just made me chuckle.
Oh, grow up,
God.
Gemma.
We're not like that one here. You shouldn't get wet after what time? And it was actually a trick question.
Was it a trick question?
I didn't
question?
Fuck up.
Was it a trick
honestly,
question? Well, did you just shit the bed?
I shit the bed badly. Yeah. And it was actually meant to be what time do you not feed them after? But a lot of people pointed it out, and Ben Reed pointed it out, and you're going to get the full set. But I think it was his missus that pointed it out. But whoever pointed it out, the set will go to you. And I'm looking forward to seeing pictures of that. Why did you laugh at Flasher? Come on.
Because I'm a child.
It's ridiculous. Richard Sounds came along and gave us some Lindy Bluetooth noise-cancelling headphones, which are 5-star on What Hi-Fi, ooh. Which is really good. We said, what was your favourite ever soundtrack? And Emma Miller has said Pulp Fiction.
Good
I think
shout.
That takes some damn good beating. I didn't come up with anything Corey-related. I thought, we're going to, you know, what soundtrack could we do for him? Lost Boys.
Yeah.
That's quite, that's really good.
Or License to Drive.
Do you ever think that him and his band will ever do a soundtrack themselves?
Yes, yes, I do.
Because like Mastodon and people have done it.
Yeah,
it's gonna happen.
Would you want him to do it?
Truth Movement have done the soundtrack to Captain Marvel. I read that the other day.
Yes,
that's gonna be good. Very good. That's why Corey's not on the scene at the moment. It's not because no one cares. Our good friends from Last Exit to Nowhere came up with some good t-shirts because we masturbated over Quentin Tarantino. Super Sounds of the 70s, which, Ben, you've got that t-shirt.
I do.
Reservoir Dogs. The question was, what year did that film come out?
1992.
And Sam Morton on email will be winning that. We also had the Hattori Hanzo, is that right?
Yeah.
Hattori Hanzo.
T-shirt from Kill Bill. And we said, who plays the bride in the film Kill Bill? So Gemma?
Uma Thurman.
And Jen Alford on email. So that's the thing, a lot of people are winning on email.
I like entries from emails.
It takes a bit more commitment.
Yeah.
Right, I think we should give away some more prizes.
Yeah.
That's quite abrupt,
so.
But I do. So, as we just reviewed the incredible movie Predator.
Oh yeah.
We have some Funko Pops.
Oh dear.
From the film. We have the Fugitive Predator and the Predator Hounds.
Wicked. Give
yes.
a rest.
The thing is, I bet those plastic Funko dogs look more realistic than the CGI was
yeah.
did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll give both sets away to someone if you tell us who directed The Predator, the new one.
Yeah.
Or try to direct it. Our good friends from Last Exit to Nowhere came along with some awesome t-shirts as always, and they've come back with some good ones this time. So as we did The Predator, they've come up with some t-shirts from Predator, you know, the one we do love.
The proper one.
Look at this design. How cool is that?
Ooh.
That is really smart. Who directed the original Predator? That was a much better film.
Mm-hmm.
But
absolutely.
Also, as we have the Rocky rewatch, we have this beautiful Mighty Mix, Jim.
Yay.
That's
good.
Really smart. Let's say it's going to be a knockout prize, yeah?
Yeah!
Who plays Rocky in the film Rocky? That's pretty simple.
Yeah, stay tuned.
Yes.
You might hear the answer.
If you don't know. Richard Sounds haven't give up on prizes and they've come back bigger and better. They've given us an Amazon Echo Dot with a smart Wi-Fi plug.
Ooh.
So you can listen to the podcast in any room of your house.
Oh, snazzy.
Let's say, what podcast would you listen to via Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn Radio or Podomatic if you won the Dot? That sounds fair, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What podcast would you listen to?
Yeah, hint.
Yes. Or you could go on skiptheend.co.uk and get the feed from there to listen to it on. But whatever you need to do, if that's your choice.
Yeah, if.
If it isn't, you ain't winning. Also, we have some Bob Ross Pezzes. Remember Pez?
Yeah. Oh, I remember cool Bob Ross.
Yeah. To win this amazing Bob Ross Pez, which is cool. You can't get them in the UK, so we've had to get them sent from Sully in America. What does he draw that's a happy something? That's only for the loyal fans out there. You know what I mean? A happy, you know, there's something he adds into forests or greenery.
The proper Bob Rosses.
Yeah. Don't go barking up some places for your answers.
Yeah. Don't go barking up the wrong.
Jesus. I mean, as if we're going to make this any easier.
And you know where to leave Zara answers.
Fucking hell. Stop immediately.
We've also got a bundle for Night School. All you need to do is leave us a 5-star iTunes rating. And Johnny English has got a brand new film coming out called Strikes Again. Again, an iTunes rating will win you a bundle. And they're really popular online. If you've seen the competitions we've done, they're one of our most popular for the compers out there.
Compers.
All you need to do to submit your answers is to go on skiptheend.co.uk, because on there there's our Instagram, our email, our Facebook and our Twitter. And you've heard, winners get it from all different avenues, and we look forward to announcing the winners in 2 weeks' time.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we talk about our favourite director. On the last episode, we picked out Oliver Stone.
Oh.
I know, a big'un.
A big'un indeed.
A big'un, a behemoth of the cinema landscape. So what we're going to do is talk about our favourite film from Mr. O. Stone. So I'm going to throw this over to Mark first. Mark, I would like your answer very quickly, please. Thank you.
Very quickly.
Platoon.
There we go, you great just shout. Did it.
This film, for me, absolutely left me numb after seeing it. I'm a huge war film fan because of my dad. I always used to watch him when I was growing up. I won't say it's the best war film of all time. Apocalypse Now, for me, probably steals it.
Hell yeah.
This is a close second. It captures war perfectly. Oliver Stone was actually in the war, so that's why he can relate and do stuff so well. I think he's actually firsthand talked about his experiences on camera quite a lot and shown how he's transferred it to this movie. The shooting's absolutely frantic. It's absolutely impossible to follow this film at times. It's insane, but it's done perfectly. It does it respectful. I absolutely love this film, and I think that Charlie Sheen is fucking awesome in this film.
Oh,
and
gotcha.
We don't give him credit enough because he's done a lot of shit nowadays. He's paying off lots of debts and all this, isn't he? He's not doing great, so he does a lot of TV and bad stuff. But William Dafoe, absolutely brilliant. The cast is all good, to be honest. Forrest Whitaker?
Yeah.
Not Whittaker, but yes. Everything about this film is so good. The script, I don't think it needed the over-the-top CGI. I don't think they had it, because obviously back then it's a long time ago, but you didn't have these stupid over-the-top special effects. It's not like Michael Bay, who would absolutely ruin this. I think this film is what war would be like. Mm. Not that I can talk like, back in the war,
during the war.
I was there, during the war. But you feel the brutality of war. It feels too raw at times, and that's why I started it with saying it left me numb. It's hard watch. It's not good, but it's absolutely brilliant. And I've not actually served in Vietnam. You would think I would.
Yeah.
I'm the sort of person I am.
Yeah, definitely.
But he has.
A Nama over there. Yeah,
and they say that he loosely based a lot of it on himself. So to go to that commitment, to put it off that well, I've actually not seen all the other films, because there's Born on the 4th of July Heaven and Earth, and I've not seen the full trilogy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But as a standalone war film, I think there's not much better out there. And watching it again this week, it felt like the first time I watched it again, which is credit to him.
Yeah.
Absolutely mind-blowing. You both love it.
Yes.
Yeah, but I must admit it's been a very long time since I've seen it. I think I saw it when I was at university, so I really do need to approach it again. But you're absolutely right, the fact that he was in Vietnam and he has those first-hand experiences, it's always going to mean that the film is going to be deeper than some sort of surface version of it from someone who has no idea what being in the shit was really like.
Yeah.
It adds a complete new dimension with Adagio strings sort of playing in the background amongst key scenes. That moment where we see Willem Dafoe get shot, I think it was the poster for Platoon.
Yeah.
Where you see him fall. Yeah. It's haunting. It really is just such a magnificent image. And I think an image like that really does kind of capture that whole feeling of what Vietnam must have been like. It's just horrific.
I'm glad it won the Oscar for Best Picture and Best Director. It kind of got the credit it deserves, because a lot of war films don't get the recognition.
They don't.
They always kind of get a couple of nods, but they don't get the full awards.
Always with the technicalities.
Yeah.
Best sound, best editing.
Yeah.
And this should win it all. Absolutely brilliant. And I think it's one of my favourite war films out there. And there's a lot to choose from. It maybe this and Full Metal Jacket are my second favourites between those two. It's a close one. But what a film.
Mm-hmm. It's on my list of future rewatches. I won't bring it anytime soon now that you've talked about it. But yeah. Somewhere down the line, we're going to properly do that one justice.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that day.
It's a great film.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
It's Natural Born Killers.
Same here.
Yeah, I thought it might be.
All day long.
If ever there was a nailed on one for me and Gemma, it's this.
Yeah.
He's made some amazing films. We've just talked about one, but none are as visually and aesthetically inventive and adventurous as this one. There's the frenzied editing and the jump cuts. So, for example, in this film, there are almost 3,000 cuts, and most films have under 1,000. So that shows you how frenetic this is. There's the use of black and white, as well as of deep colours like green. There's the use of the Dutch angles, as well as varied filters and lenses. Then there's the things like the parodies. So Wayne Gale's TV show is like a tabloid-style show. You've got the sitcom that we have in Mallory's house when you were their dad. There's the animation, there's commercials, there's almost subliminal imagery. All of these things, it's a real kitchen sink of a film because everything has been thrown in. And it all adds up to this extraordinary, hyper-caffeinated movie that simultaneously encapsulates and sends up the MTV generation. That low attention span generation, of which Mark is clearly a charter member. But none of that style would matter if it wasn't married to substance as well. So the script is based on a story by Quentin Tarantino, as we know. Plus, the film has exceptional performances from the likes of Juliette Lewis, Woody Harrelson and Robert Downey Jr. It's a magnificent bit of work all ends up.
I was completely obsessed with this film when it first came out. And I must have been probably about 13, 14 years old. Mm. And I watched this on a loop. And this is probably something my mum and dad should not hear. And don't worry, I've not turned into a serial killer since then. But it's the mixture of action. It's the mixture of anime. The inner images of what the characters are feeling inside. So every now and again, you might see Mickey or Mallory do a scene on the screen. And then all of a sudden, it jump cuts to Mallory with maybe blood on her head. Or Mickey just screaming with his sunglasses. And it's the inner demons, it's the voices inside them that tell them what to do. And like Ben said, it's very subliminal, so maybe some of you might not have even seen it or just dismissed it, whereas others that just love how the significance of these little jump cuts are to the story, because they are sick in the head. Mm-hmm. They might come across as these charismatic and lovable serial killers that the media personify them, but at the heart of it, the core of it all, they are fucking maniacs. And it's just a wonderful film. It's a film I will never tire of. It's a film I will happily pop on for about 2 hours, and then I'm probably going to want to watch it again. I love this film.
Calling them maniacs, it just made me think of Wayne Gale. This is American Maniacs with me, Wayne Gale.
Wayne Gale!
What else can I say? It's one of the most iconic films of all time, isn't it? Anyone that's done film studies at uni will have always watched this film. Yeah. What you said about the colour, I always think of Woody Harrelson in that green.
Yes, yeah.
That's one of the most iconic scenes of all time.
What about when they're tripping balls in that pharmacy and they're trying to get the antidote to the venom, and the whole store is cloaked in this neon green? It's just a sea.
It's amazing. I was about to say we should do it as a rewatch. Fucking did.
It's my very first rewatch.
Yeah, you're not going to top that, I don't think.
I don't think so.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's the most locked in of ever.
Yes. I think so. Yeah. What about the good folks on social media?
Yeah.
Oh, we've had plenty of responses.
Yeah.
On Facebook, Jack Thompson says, has to be Wall Street.
Oh, that's such a good
classic
film.
I've not seen it in a long time. On Twitter, Grand Moff Michael at Logos728 has agreed with Gemma and I and said, Natural Born Killers. Seeing it for the first time was a visceral, visual gut punch, and it's also the film where he develops new narrative techniques for his films thereafter.
Hell yes.
True indeed. On Twitter as well, Gavin at Mini Media Reviewer has said Platoon. He said it was his first foray into Vietnam War films and it's stuck with him ever since. Sheen, Berenger and Defoe, all superb.
Mm-hmm.
On Twitter, Lynn at Mamster Lynn has said Salvador, including an incredible performance by Mr. James Woods. Now, I've not seen that one.
I've never seen that one, but I know that James Woods is a bit of an arsehole now.
Yeah, he's a bell end, but he's a good actor.
I need to see it.
Mr. Hand at Philip Hand 2 has said Any Given Sunday, lots of Pacino shouting and a great movie.
I love that film.
I like that film, but it's too much Pacino shouting, as most of his modern films are.
Yeah. Ha!
Hoo-ah!
That's a bit Partridge, that first one.
I'm Al Pacino.
That's what I would pay to see. Fuck you, Don Cattino. Give me Alan Partridge done by Pim.
Say hello to my little friend.
Very good, Gemma.
Now stop.
Never.
On Instagram, Lazar Bukovac has said JFK because it showed us that we cannot always rely on our governments and our leaders. We have to think beyond that.
Ooh, that's a good analogy.
Come and join us. Good film. Long film, though, isn't it?
Too long.
Too long in a way. on Twitter. Shakabuku at SportsVarius has said, big fan of Savages, flawed but stylish, and who doesn't like style?
Oh my God, I love Savages.
Is that with the all-star cast? It's got loads of people.
Not that long ago. I'm sure Blake Lively's in
there. Yeah, I was about to say, has it got like Gossip Girl in
there? There's like a really cool scene with like Massive Attack's Paradise Circus playing. It's just really? Oh, so
I need to see that one. Stuart at From Page to Screen has said, easily Heaven and Earth. If you've not seen it, do check it out.
There you go.
And I haven't seen it.
No, neither have I.
It's on the list. Tam Lizanne O'Driscoll at Tam Lizanne has said, The Doors. Val Kilmer is great as Jim Morrison.
My second choice.
It's an excellent film.
I've not seen that in an age.
No,
great film. Yeah.
It's one of those that I remember being a kid and it always used to be on ITV on a Saturday night at 9 o'clock when I was like 12.
Like now we have Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, Hot Fuzz.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck's sake.
And then finally on Facebook, Andrew Donlan has said, I love noir films, so it's U-Turn. Sean Penn as a drifter embroiled in a murder plot by femme fatale Jennifer Lopez.
It was all right until you said Jennifer Lopez.
That film's all right. I quite like that film.
You've seen it, yeah.
Yeah, it's decent. Yeah.
Okay.
Fair enough.
So, shall we masturbate again?
Yes.
I think so.
Is it your turn?
It is. I've got to pick out the hat.
On a drum roll.
Always. Ah, it's nerve-wracking, isn't it? We've had a good roll. So, on the next episode, we will be masturbating over David O. Russell.
Way!
Ooh.
I don't know what that noise was.
Sorry, I couldn't resist. It's rewatch time. And on the last episode, it was my choice, and I decided to go for Rocky from 1976, starring Sylvester Stallone and Talia Shire. A small-time down-on-his-luck boxer gets the opportunity of a lifetime when he's selected to fight the heavyweight champion of the world, Apollo Creed. This fight will give the Italian stallion a chance to show a world who has been unfavourable to him that he is indeed a somebody. Now, if you've never watched this film...
Everyone has, fuck
yeah,
this.
Good, I was about to say, please switch off immediately. However, we're going to be talking about this film, spoilers et al. Now, I know that you guys have a little bit of a special place in your heart for this, which I think you have. So I'm actually going to throw this one to Mark, if you don't mind, Ben, because I know that...
I do
that
mind, Gemma.
You
do
mind.
He quits.
Oh, dear. Table flip. I actually want to throw this to you, Mark, because I know that you and your dad did go to the scenes of where Rocky was filmed a few years ago. And I would really like you to kick off this talk and say why it is quite important to you.
It's not. I don't really give a shit about Rocky.
Oh, well, this has turned out completely bad.
When I was a kid, there's three major things that mattered in life. One was junk food. Sweets, crisps, cakes, candy, you name it.
Nothing's changed there.
Sing it, sister.
The second was wrestling. As a kid, nothing's all I could was wrestling. And the third was Rocky. Me and my dad followed this all the time. It's the film that he grew me up on. This and Enter the Dragon with Bruce Lee. That's probably why I'm so hard now. I'm walking around looking
double-hard bastard.
Look at that, knots in cotton. But yeah, that's what he says. When I show my dad my arms, he says, knots in cotton.
Oh, it's like arms of candy floss.
This movie is unlike anything else when it comes to sports films. And it isn't a sport film. It's more than that. It's more than just a boxing film. It's about the unbreakable human spirit. And it's the determination of this guy and the will to go a distance. And everybody watches Rocky and wants to be him. Mm. Everyone. If you don't, I don't know, you're not right. You're just not. Every kid wanted to be Rocky. You run up steps as a kid, you were Rocky. You'd punch your mate, you were Rocky. You know, it's you punch your mum in the face, you're Rocky. Whatever it is, it's Rocky. And everyone loves the film. Everyone loves the soundtrack. Everyone loves everything about it. And to go to Philadelphia a couple of years ago, Ben, you went before me, didn't you?
I did, with our
good friend John. Was just magical. I got to take my dad to the place where Rocky's house was. We actually, before it got knocked down, went to Adrian's pet shop. We got to go to Mickey's gym, and it's one of those moments I'll treasure forever because this film is my childhood, and I absolutely love everything about it and can't wait to digest it more now.
Fabulous. Well, hold please.
I'm going now.
Go on, Ben.
It's the greatest underdog story ever told, isn't it?
Yeah. Apart from the Mighty Ducks.
Exactly the same.
Oh, you've spoiled my next rewatch pick. Yeah, it's a great film. And it's one of those films that, because it's so famous and so big in the popular consciousness, that I thought I'd seen it more recently than I had. I sat there watching it the other day thinking, I don't remember large swathes of this film, because it's probably been at least 15 years since I've seen it. I probably watch Rocky IV once a year, but yeah. I haven't watched Rocky I in the best part of a generation. And to be honest, I'd forgotten how long it takes to get going. The first half of the film is pretty slow. It's once he starts training in the second hour of the film, that's when everything kicks in, and everything from that point forward is glorious.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a defining moment in cinema, let's be honest. It is indeed such a pop culture moment that is still parodied to this day. And it's a story that's actually so simplistic and at the same time so inspiring. And it can appeal a mass audience to, you know, whether they're into boxing or not, to get off their arse and actually do something with their life. You know, it's a story of where underdogs have a chance to shine, and you couldn't get more of an oppressed person than Rocky Balboa. But the history behind the story of Rocky adds a whole new level of wow to the whole film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Sylvester Stallone was down on his luck. He had hardly a dollar to his name. He had to sell his dog in order to get something somewhere. No, come
that's
on.
That's when times are tough. Yeah.
When a dog gets involved, that's it. You've got my heart. But he didn't. But studio execs didn't really believe in the story, so they took a chance on him. And look at it now. I mean, look at the legacy that Rocky has left cinema.
Yeah, more than anything.
It's huge. And I think that's where we should point to our focus for the very first part. Sylvester Stallone. Now, in my opinion, people are born to play roles, and he was born to play Rocky, because when it all boils down to it, he is Rocky Balboa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's all off his own screenplay.
Yes.
We were talking about good screenplays earlier. Mm. He fucking nailed it in this.
Yeah, it's amazing. It was the first screenplay he'd ever written. In terms of acting, he'd had a couple of bit parts in earlier films, but he hadn't done anything big. And he was a great advocate for himself. When he went to studios to pitch this idea, he said, here you go, you can buy this script if you like it, but I'm playing Rocky. And people turned him down. And then thankfully he got an offer. One studio agreed, okay, fine, we'll let you play the lead. Because without him, it wouldn't have been the success that he is. He is Rocky. This is from his heart.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has the weight of the world on his shoulders throughout the whole film. You know, when he's in these sort of really cheap and nasty kind of boxing matches when we first meet him, to him being a debt collector, like threatening people just so they can give a few hundred dollars to him and his boss. But you get a sense that getting beaten down is just a daily occurrence. Mm-hmm. It's life for him. He's used to being shit on by the world. But the moment of softness, the moment of gentle that he experiences within his life is going to the pet shop. And, oh my God, my heart breaks thinking of funny jokes to just get a little rise out of Adrian. And I just think that is so adorable.
That's what I do on every episode, to try and get it out of you two.
Really?
Yeah, I think of new jokes. Yeah.
They often,
I bring them.
They often involve spaff.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it's not having the same effect on me that Rocky did on Adrian, I can tell you that.
Yeah, and I always want to puke up afterwards.
that's a bit harsh.
Sorry.
I genuinely tell you that my friend Ben, not this Ben, used to work in a pet shop? This what? Is true.
Is this Benny?
No, another Ben. And he actually got sacked.
Why?
Because he got caught with his hands in the trill. Anyway.
Oh my God.
So Adrian, what's Ben's quit. Ben looks like he's going to quit. What are you going to do to try and save yourself, Ben?
I'm going to have a can of Brothers is what I'm going to do. Because I need some more booze to get through this.
Gemma, do you want some booze? Because I think you're going to need it.
Have you still got the whole pack?
Yes. So should we talk about Adrian? Because I think she's a very, very closed book. We don't get anything from her, and sometimes it's an irritating performance because you just want to shake her and say, just say fucking something. He's there, he's trying to get in your pants, but she's very frustrating to watch. I like the performance because you see her warm, and obviously having that brother who's overprotective of Paulie, you can't ever probably get you're going to be like that. But he's trying and working his magic, and he seems so sincere. He's not just there just to get his leg over and bin her off. He wants the full shebeel.
Shabelle.
And it's I don't like her performance until we start to see her. When he's actually officially with her, after that annoying weird kiss where it's on the door and he's like, it starts dropping down. It's a weird angle to kiss someone. It's very strange. And she doesn't look like she wants to kiss him, and he keeps going and it's a bit slimy.
Did you know that during filming, especially those beginning scenes that we first meet Adrienne, Talia Shire was ill with the flu.
Oh.
And what she tried to do, she didn't want to pass on anything to any of the other co-stars. Now, I don't know whether or not that was her motivation to make Adrienne a very closed book, but I quite like that. because we actually see so much growth from the beginning of the film to the end, where she doesn't care about going through the crowds. I mean, this was a woman that wanted to just be in her own company and just steal a few glances at Mr. Balboa. But at the end, she's just tearing herself through. She's a completely changed woman, not just her demeanour, but also her physicality, her look.
She's massively different by the end of the film, and in the successive films as well. She seems like a completely different character.
Yeah.
That's the power of Lemsip. That's how it fucking works.
Because you are one of
my favourite stories about the making of this film is we all know the majorly romantic scene where Rocky takes her ice skating in the closed arena. Now, that was a happy accident because it wasn't supposed to be closed, or that wasn't how they were going to film it. Originally, they were going to go and skate in a full arena. There was going to be all people skating around them. But their budget was so tight, they could not afford the extras. They would have needed like 100 extras, and they didn't have the money for it. So Stallone, on the fly, rewrote the scene to make it so that they'd be the only one there. And it's so much more romantic that it's just the two of them than if there were a load of jabronis around them.
I love in the background, 4 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, shut up, man. I want to hear what they're saying.
But he completely talks about himself. He does everything so wrong on the first date. So he puts her on an ice rink. She's got the boots, but he's like doing a dad run next to her. He's only talking about himself and fighting, which isn't really a first date thing to talk about. But you don't care because the magnetism they have towards each other is just so... It's love. They're meant to be together.
Yeah. And it's so funny seeing a young Stallone as kind of nervous and flustered. Because we don't think of Stallone as being nervous and flustered. He's the big badass motherfucker who just kills people.
That's him.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sweet.
That's
what it is. Like this cider.
Oh, this is very sweet.
Toffee apple.
Should we talk about Mickey? Because he's one of the most passionate characters I've ever seen on the screen of film. He's old, he's irritable, he's only got the right interest for his people that work for him. He doesn't want to fuck Rocky off. He doesn't want to be that bad, aggressive guy, but he has to. He has to get to the root of him and make him become this ultimate fighter, because without that, you're just going to be... You know, can't be half-hearted as a trainer.
No.
But the problem is with this, right? I watched it, and because I think you might have done the same, Ben, I then got a taste and I had to watch Rocky 2, 3, 4. And they've been on ITV2 this week.
Yes, it did.
I keep seeing tweets from people like, watch it. I'm like, no, we're doing the first one, guys. The fact that we lose him in the third one, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but what a character. What an absolute legend. And he's the father that you always wanted.
Burgess Meredith is an absolute force of nature as Mickey, and no wonder he was nominated for an Oscar. And he has one of the greatest lines of all time. You're going to eat lightning and you're going to crap thunder. How great
is that?
Dude. I love that line so much. Yeah, it's amazing how many of the characters were nominated for Oscars, actually.
Yeah.
I think pretty much all the supporting characters, like Stallone, Burgess Meredith, the guy who plays Paulie was nominated. I think Talia Shire was nominated as well.
Yeah. That's mental.
Yeah, it was, really.
But isn't it a testament to just how good the film is? It's not just all about the action. It really is the heart of it, the story.
Mm-hmm.
The whole fact that somebody, a nobody, is going to become a somebody just for one night. And it doesn't matter about if this guy is going to win a title, if he's going to beat Apollo. It's about proving the world that he is worth something.
Yeah, and he does.
Oh, indeed he does.
And I love the ending, how it's somewhat sort of ambiguous as to what the result is.
Because you never find out, do you?
No, you don't need to.
No.
Because going the distance was the victory. Because I don't think anyone had taken Apollo the distance before, had they?
No, and the fact that when we see Carl Weathers knocked down,
that's
awesome. Like, the first time, oh my God. And I always forget, because when I associate with Rocky, then you think of like Mr. T, Hulk Hogan, all these people. He always wins. He always beats the shit out of him in the end. Yeah. And he's this heroic, that end, the punch the air moment. And we don't get it in this moment.
Yeah.
No. We don't. We never know.
Which brings me to the choreography of the fight sequences.
God.
Even the montage scenes. I'll come to that in a second. But the choreography of both Apollo Creed and Rocky Balboa, you feel like you are genuinely in a real-life boxing match. The sell of the punches and the impact is mind-blowing.
Yeah, they're choreographed tremendously well, especially that main bout. Even though some of the punches have clearly been whiffed, they're nowhere near their face when they start flailing backwards. But you can forgive that because it's been so well staged. Because apparently they tried to get in there and do it on the fly, and it didn't really work. So Stallone and Apollo, they scripted out basically move for move, punch for punch of how they were going to do it, and just read pages and pages of diagrams of how they were going to move. Mm. So it's really brilliantly done.
A friend of the podcast, Ricky, tagged myself and Mark on Facebook of a video of Carl Weathers and Sylvester Stallone practicing the moves. And you see the cell of when Sylvester Stallone kind of 360s himself down to the mat. It is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It really is.
The attention to detail, which we don't get anymore. It'd be CGI now.
Well,
it would be fucking CGI.
I would like to say it was seen even better, more flawlessly in Creed.
Yes.
Yeah.
2 years ago. And of course, we've got the second Creed coming up at the end of the year, which I'm very excited about. But no Rocky discussion is complete without a talk about the montage scene.
Oh, yeah.
You can't have a good film without a montage scene. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is it. Bloody hell, Sylvester Stallone's packing a bit of heat, isn't he? Mm-hmm. Doing one-handed press-ups and running upstairs and everything. But what I love about it, when he first attempts to run up the rocky stairs now, and he only gets halfway and he's knackered, he's completely out of wind, you know, he's like ready to call it a day. But during that whole sequence when you've got flying high now, swelling up in the background, and he runs and he hits the top and he's victorious. He's done it and he is the king of Philadelphia. Oh, my days.
It's so good. Mark, when you went to the Rocky Steps, did you run up them?
I did.
Yeah. Did you make it all the way?
I did. And my dad walked it, which is sweet, so he actually got to do it as well. Yeah. It's actually quite a trek.
It looks.
Yeah, I didn't get all the way
did
up.
Did you
not? No, me and John started running. We got about six steps in and we were like, fuck this. And we walked the rest of the way.
I actually did. I don't know how, because I was a right fatty back then. I still am, but not as bad. But yeah, I absolutely ran them. I just thought, I've got one chance to do this. Mm. Yeah. I think I had a bit of an asthma attack after that, but I was struggling. I haven't even got asthma, but I was like, but I did it, and it felt good.
Yeah.
It was good.
Did you then go into the museum, seeing as you were right there?
No.
No. Because it's fucking $20 to get in.
$20?
Oh, screw that.
Bollocks to that. Run down them. Flying low now.
But the soundtrack, man. That every single track. If you're going to go to the gym, I'm not one of those kind of protein bar eater wankers. I'm not going to be one of those people. Oh, I've got my protein shake and my three things of broccoli that I put in. Yeah, those people you work with. Has anyone got these people? They have to have their sweet potato mash and you still look a knobhead. It doesn't make any difference.
They always have those little plastic juice bottles.
Yeah.
And they put their whey protein and all that kind of shit.
Oh, it makes me. You'll see me in about 6 months looking like Brock Lesnar. Yeah, I've done it. But it's ridiculous. And where's this going?
You're just having a rant about protein people.
But yeah, the soundtrack.
Yeah, there we go.
The soundtrack is absolutely phenomenal.
It's wonderful.
And, that's where it came. Every single song on the soundtrack would be what I'd listen to if I was one of those wankers.
Yes.
Okay.
So there we go. It all came together.
That was worth it.
Yeah, totally. We didn't waste time whatsoever.
Even though we're focusing on this, I want to ask you both a question. What is your favourite Rocky film of all time?
Four. By a mile.
It is. And as much as I love Rocky and it's got the nostalgia for my parents and everything else, Rocky IV is the best.
Come on. So good. What film are you going to get with a robot coming in saying happy birthday, Paulie? Done.
If he dies, he dies. Oh, should we do Rocky IV?
Well, yeah, let's do that next week.
Yeah. Well, Creed, with Creed 2 coming up, and we're going to have the son of Draco.
It's all going to be good.
Oh my God. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed that. How about you guys?
Yeah, it's very good.
I'm going to go home, go to the gym, and put the soundtrack on.
And eat one of those protein bars like a wanker. So, Mark, let's score it. Go on, your thoughts, please.
Perfect 10, done.
Fabulous. Ben?
I don't think it's a perfect film. I think the first half is a bit of a slog. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I think 4 is a superior film. So it's an 8 for me.
Okay. I'm going to go with Mark on this one. It's a 10. It's a classic. It's a Stone Cold classic. And I'm so glad that we got to chat about it. So that gives us a skip to the end score of Rocky being 9 out of 10.
So whose choice is it next?
It's not mine.
That would be me.
Ah.
From one 70s classic to another. It's A Clockwork Orange.
Yes!
Time for round 2 of The Actor Factor.
Yeah!
Yeah!
So here's how the game works. Mark and Gemma are playing as a team. Team Gark.
Yes!
Yeah.
And each member of the team has 2.5 minutes to go through a stack of names of actors and actresses. They then have to describe that actor or actress to their partner, and the partner has to guess who it is. All sounds pretty simple so far, doesn't it?
No. Very.
No. Even that well, this, is confused, yes.
Well, this no. bodes well.
It's all good.
This is going to get worse, because this is where we throw some spanners into it. You're not allowed to say the name of the person, obviously, because that would be a shit game if you could. You're not allowed to say any of their character names. You're not allowed to say the name of any films they've been in. You're not allowed to say the names of any co-stars they've had, or the character names of those co-stars.
Christ.
Or, one extra rule that we brought in last time around as well, you're not allowed to use any of their catchphrases or famous lines.
Oh, yeah.
Everything else, though, is pretty much fair game.
So basically, we've got to describe the character they play in the film, or something about
them. Or something
them,
about yeah. their life, and you describe exactly. the real person. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But I'm going to be on you like a hawk. I'm going to be super vigilant. I'm not letting anything slip by. You've got a big score to beat. Gemma and I, last time round, we scored 30 points between us.
Certainly did, mate.
Which is a high bar.
Mm. So, easy.
So good luck to you both. You're going to get 2.5 minutes each. If you're in the middle of describing a clue when the alarm goes off, I will let you finish.
Okay. That's nice.
Yeah, it's good of me, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Bless you.
So are we ready to begin?
I'm ready. How about you, Mark?
My palms are sweating like Gary Glitter's in Mothercare. Look. Gross.
So that's Glitter and Watkins for those counting.
Yep.
Yeah. Try and get Rolf Harris in by the end of the day.
We'll get a turkey.
I bet some people in prison have said that.
So, Gemma, you're going to go first. You're going to get 2.5 minutes.
Okay.
And your time starts now.
His voice is very, very synonymous with documentaries and films. He...
Oh, Morgan Freeman.
Yes, well done.
One.
This is hard.
The guy he played in a film was very good at counting cocktail sticks on a floor if it was dropped.
Dustin Hoffman.
Well done, yes.
Two.
He plays a character that doesn't really have a character. We talked about his film a few episodes ago.
Oh, right, him. Yeah. Fucking hell.
Famous for westerns.
Clint Eastwood?
Yes.
Three. 30 seconds gone.
Okay. Aussie, big bastard, likes to sing on ships and has a really crap shit Australian band.
What's his... Russell Crowe.
Yes.
Four.
One of my favourite actors of all time. He's got a smile, kind of like an older Leonardo DiCaprio. Has a lot of films that are my favourite films of all time.
Jack Nicholson.
Yes.
Well done, that's five.
Has a very famous catchphrase, Austrian, big bastard, even bigger bastard than before. Likes to... lift weights.
Arnie.
Yeah.
Six.
Very classy guy. Has glasses. Always complains about vehicle items being ripped off of explosions. I'm trying not to say the.
Oh, what the fuck's his name?
He's
British guy.
Yeah, British guy. Really old guy.
Michael Caine.
Well done. Well done.
You got 1 minute left. That's okay. 7 points.
Let's be quicker. Come on.
I don't know how to do that one. Okay. Lady, she's quite classy. She's a little bit older than some of the actresses, but I like her. I don't think you're going to get this. She was in TV. She did a lot of acting about...
did a lot of acting?
Yeah.
This actress?
Pass, I don't know that one.
Fucking hell.
It was Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
Give me a bit more.
Okay. She can act with only her eyes in a particular film by Edgar Wright.
Oh.
Uncredited. But she's done a lot of other films.
Blanchett, what's her
yes,
first name?
Yes, go on.
Kate.
Yes,
well done. That's eight. Okay. You've got 30 seconds left.
Oh God, I don't think you could pronounce this surname if I'm absolutely honest, but he's Irish. He is in a film with a lot of superheroes and a Marvel, but not the main Marvel you think of. Irish. Plays a robot very
Michael
well.
Michael
Go on.
Fassbender.
Yes, oh my God, you got
that's the nine. You got 10 seconds
okay.
left.
Quick.
Oh Christ. That's a hard one. She helped a kid with NFL in school. She's won a few Oscars in her time.
Oh
my God, are you going to... Go on.
Sandra
go on.
Bullock.
Yes, oh my God, you got it.
Oh.
Well done.
Just as the bell struck, you got it. Just as the bell
done.
Struck. So you scored there 10 points.
Well done.
I thought I did better than that. You know, when you're going all right.
Yeah.
Fucking
so, if you are to beat the score that Gemma and I set last time round, Mark, you need to get 21. Are you ready?
No.
Well, you're going to have to be, because your time starts now.
Okay.
Australian, likes to get a kit off with her husband in one of her films, and does a lot of adverts for perfume and stuff like that.
Nicole Kidman?
Yes.
One.
One of my favourite actors and really held
Kurt
one of,
Russell?
Held one of the stereos up to make his love for a girl.
John Cusack.
Yes.
Two.
Well done.
The best actor that Taron... the best actor that Tarantino ever cast, and he was a nobody, and now he's one of the best in the absolute
world.
John
Travolta.
No, another one.
Samuel L. Jackson.
No, in his war film.
Oh, Christoph Waltz.
Yes.
Well done.
Three.
The best. Posh English wanker, always in chick flicks.
Hugh Grant.
Yes. Four. He died. He's a really, really good actor.
Leonardo
DiCaprio. No, he's not dead, you idiot. He's dead in real life. He's got, like, three names. He's really, really old.
Philip Seymour Hoffman?
Yes.
He's not old. He's a young pup.
He is.
Neither.
We'll do anything now for a stupid fucking paycheck.
Nicolas Cage.
He used to be fucking amazing, very close, but now he does absolute shit straight to DVD. Oh, and he used to be fucking amazing and a hero that we all loved at Christmas.
Oh, Christmas.
At Christmas. What? He's in the best Christmas film of all time.
1:20
what
left.
Fucking hell, come on. He's got no hair. Come on.
You might want to pass on this one,
yeah,
man.
Come on. Fucking hell, it's Bruce Willis.
Oh, him.
He's a fat hack that Ben hates.
Jack Black.
No, another one.
Oh,
he also directs films.
Oh, Kevin Smith.
Thank you.
Six.
Has the same surname, but not the same first name. And he's he's got a son that's annoying. And he's one of the... with another person that can make your mind blank with a pen.
Oh, Will Smith.
Thank you.
Seven. You've got just under a minute left.
Same surname.
Like the person we said beforehand, Will first Smith. Name, okay. but Will? Also like a piece of meat. No, not Will, before that.
Oh, hang on. Who was... Oh, Bruce.
No, you dickhead.
What are you talking about?
Fucking, you're rubbish. He does adverts now for a phone company.
Oh, Harvey Keitel.
No, for a phone company.
Oh, Kevin Bacon.
Yes, thank you.
Eight.
Fucking
hell. Don't watch
hell.
TV.
30 seconds.
The best actress in the world of all time. Oof. Very, very good.
Well, there's a lot of very, very good actresses.
Really fucking good. One of the most famous. Oh, fuck it. Our uncle. Next. Our uncle.
Bill Murray.
Thank you. Next.
Nine.
Fuck. Our dad.
Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Ten. You got 15 well. Seconds left.
Fuck that. One of the best bad guys of all time. Absolutely harrowing in TV as well. We fucking love him and talk about him in a couple of rewatches at Ben shows.
Oh.
Come on, one of the best badasses ever. Weird. Weird Eye.
Steve Buscemi.
No, Ed Harris.
What?
Weird
Ed eye. Harris has beautiful eyes.
He
how
had,
dare
he
you?
He had a weird eye in one film.
Of course, but I feel really bad now because I've just labelled Steve Buscemi as a guy with bad eyes.
See, I just said Forrest Whitaker when he said weird eye. But anywho.
So the answer could have been why.
Did we get 20?
You did. So Mark, you scored 10 as well. So for an overall score of 20.
It's not bad.
Very poor. Very poor indeed.
I don't think that was that bad.
I thought that was... It was good for what we worked with.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Now, of course, this means that I've won.
Yes.
Because Mark and I will be the team next time round. So.
That means you're going to carry me on the next one.
Always do, pal.
Standard.
Oh, that was harder than it seems.
Yeah, yeah. It's a sweaty game to play, isn't it?
God, come on, Bruce Willis. That was the easiest one. Come on, I'm still angry about that.
I don't know about the weird eye guy. We had three answers there.
So we're going to come back for the final round?
Yeah.
In
2 weeks'
time.
Yeah,
I'll be Games Master.
It's time for Skip to the Recommend, that point of the show where we bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It can be something old, it can be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now and we want you to enjoy it too. You know how it works by now.
I can even lip sync when Ben is saying that, mm-hmm. So I know the score, mate.
I always nod my head along, I like
yeah,
it. I wish
do.
We should film sometimes
Shall
so people
we?
Could enjoy.
We could do that.
Nah, fuck that.
No, no chance.
No way. Never.
Mark, what have you got?
A graphic novel.
Ooh.
It's not one that you're going to like though, sorry Ben.
Oh.
It's the Yellow Submarine 50th Anniversary Edition that's just come for Beatles.
Oh, interesting.
And it's
yes.
absolutely beautiful. So I bought this for one of my friends as a present. And you know when you don't want to open your friend's present, but you're like, oh, this looks cool.
Yeah.
So I was looking at it. It came from Amazon, which is really good, especially for Prime, next day delivery.
Amazon Prime.
And it came, and I was looking at the hardback edition. I was thinking, this looks fucking sexy, like really sexy. And I thought, well, I've still got to give her the present. But I ordered myself one because it just looks so good. And I thought, it's one of those things that I know will sell out, and then I'll have to get like a cheap floppy version, which I don't want. No one wants a floppy when you can have the hard
That's
one.
That's right.
It's done by Bill Morrison, who also did work for Simpsons in the early days,
cool.
and a lot of the Disney films, the classic Disney, like Dumbo and stuff like that. So the artwork is really iconic, but everyone has seen the film Yellow Submarine or seen clips of it. It's that really colourful, beautiful animation. It's like that, and it comes alive. Every page is the most colourful. I can't read. That's not even a joke. I can't read books.
Yeah, we're aware. We're aware.
That's why it's a picture book.
Yes, and it's really nice just to sit there and look at the artwork. It's kind of, you get the story, you get the context and everything else that you normally get with a graphic novel, but just the pictures are fucking beautiful and they're for all ages. You could show a kid as a picture book and they'd love it,
yeah.
My mentality. You could show your parents and they're going to enjoy it because they're Beatles fans. It's a really well put together book, and it's worth, I think it's like 16 quid, but it's worth every penny. And it is one of those books you'd have on your coffee table at home, which we've talked about before, which people would come in, pick up, have a look and put down. It's just beautiful. Every page you could print out and put in a frame, it's absolutely stunning. And both of you, I know, even if you're not a massive Beatles fan, would appreciate the artwork and the colours and all this. It's so iconic, isn't it, the Beatles designs? When you look at them, you think, that's the Beatles straight away. It's beautiful.
I love the Beatles so, so much. And I remember that whole era, and obviously with the Blue Meanie, and it's just, it was such a psychedelic part of their career where, you know, they may or may not have been experimenting with mind-altering drugs.
They absolutely were. They've never denied
it. They admitted it, haven't they?
Yeah. They don't mind. They're happy for it, to people say.
But I love it because it was certainly a different way to actually personify that area of their career. I just, the whole, the Yellow Submarine film is a joy. It's just, and the album's so much fun. I'm sold.
I've got kind of a second recommendation that is off the back of this.
Go on.
I saw the John Lennon film this week, Imagine. And I recommend people don't fucking watch it. So if you're going to recommend something, it's one of the worst pieces of shit I've ever seen in my entire life. And I love John Lennon. I think he's an absolute genius. He wrote some of the best songs of all time. Mm-hmm. He's not my favourite Beatle, George is, but I still think he's a very, very cool guy. I went to the cinema to see it, think, oh, I'm going to give this a try. Went in, and I'm not joking, I lasted about 20 minutes. Story of my life. But no, honestly, I wish.
I think 20 minutes.
I wish.
Yeah. Well, generous.
That would be brilliant. But it's absolutely awful. Yoko Ono is one of the most annoying twats in the history of anything. Doesn't matter if it's just who's married to someone cool. She's just annoying. She sings this song at the start, which is about being the husband to John Lennon. And she goes, Mr. Lennon, in this tone that will go through you and drive you insane. She's sitting there playing chess with him, putting the pieces down her bra. And it's not David Lynch that's directed this. It's not an episode of Twin Peaks. It's fucking weird. So what do they then go and do? They walk around New York with a... What's the thing when you go to the doctors and they listen to your chest? Is it a
stethoscope?
One of them. Yeah. And they're listening to statues, as you would, to hear the pulse. And it's one of those really up-its-own-ass hipster shite. And then they go to the beach and start writing John loves, and they don't tell you who, and let the water come in at the right point so you're not quite sure if they love each other. And then they're wearing top hats and walking. And I literally stood up after 20 minutes and went, fuck this, I'm going home. It's not worth it. The only good thing about that night was I had a tango ice blast and the cinema did a pina colada version.
Nice.
So if that's something to recommend, that's actually going to be my new recommendation of the week. But the film is absolute ass.
Well, how about I give you a counter recommendation rather than watch that? Watch George Harrison Living in the Material World, directed by Martin Scorsese, a much better documentary on the best
Does
Beatle.
That have her put inputs?
Nope.
Nope.
There's no
chest bits down her top?
No appearance from Ms. Ono.
No, that's a shame.
Oh, no.
So this Imagine film then, is it an old film? Is it from the
70s? Yeah, they just brought it back for one day.
Right.
I thought, oh, go and watch it. That'll be great. Great, the cinema experience. Fucking wank. The best thing was my drink. Yeah. And they got a Twix as well, you know, in the boxed meal deal. Yeah. That was the good thing about it.
That's Twix.
So I drove home with my Twix, my ice blast, and I was not happy. And I paid £11 for that.
Got like the apparel of a 10-year-old though.
It's not often I walk out of the cinema, but the point when she was trying to seductively wear her tights, pull them up, and start putting this fucking prawn down her top.
Prawn?
Fuck, a prawn. A prawn would have been more sexy. I hate her.
That nobody can put tights on sexy because the crotch gets baggy. You got to think of the gusset. You got to like jump into.
This is why Ben doesn't wear them for me anymore.
This
I ask him to. Yeah. I'm always, but no.
Tell you what, man. Come to skip to the end for the movie reviews, but stay for the crotch issues with tights. That's the kind of goodness we bring.
The struggle is
We're
real.
We're on episode 105. We're scraping the barrel. Yeah. But don't go and watch that fucking film. Buy the book instead, and there you go.
And don't wear tights. Gemma, what's your pick?
Well, I've gone for a bit of a cultured foreign film.
Ooh,
la-dee-da. There's no berets, there's no chai lattes. It's a film called Cold War, and it's directed by Pavel Pavlikowski, who directed the Oscar-winning film Ida, and it stars Joanna Kulig and Thomas Cott, and it's set against the backdrop of the Cold War in the 1950s in Poland, Berlin, Yugoslavia, and Paris. Now, the best way I can describe this film, it's a darker, more conflicted version of La La Land, but with no sense of feeling you could waltz amongst the stars and there's no musical numbers in there.
Ben, sit down. You can't watch it yet. We need to do the rest of the episode.
I'm halfway
there. Look at him. He's so
halfway
eager.
No, she had me at there's no musical numbers.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, there is singing, but it's not to the point where they start walk down the street and start bursting about how there's another day of sun in
you
LA.
You lost me again, though.
But the film tells the... The film tells the passionate story between Zula and Victor, two people who have incredible chemistry together, but they have such a destructive nature about them, they should never be together at all. But music is a vital component to the film. So we start the story with Polish folk music, and Victor and his team set out to record these songs to help with the propaganda machine for the country at the time. And Zula comes into Victor's life by auditioning to be part of this musical troupe to perform this music about communism and agriculture and making sure that Poland is a great, great country. But of course, in the 1950s, the Cold War sort of kicked in by then. And as the film goes on, the music morphs from this raw rural melody to a choreographed orchestral performance. And it eventually transforms into jazzy Parisian ballads. And we see the evolution of not just the music, but their relationship through this interpretation. I didn't think I was going to enjoy this. I thought it was going to be far too pretentious for my liking. But it showed me that it's not just about formulaic love. The story that stays with me is the films that have exposed wounds, that isn't shy to say that this is not a perfect relationship. And they're not. They're completely flawed characters in their own right. But Pawlikowski has received so much praise for this film. It's making a lot of film critics' top five films of this year already. It's a small film. It's not going to be the likes of Infinity War. It's certainly not going to take as much money as those kind of films. But it's a film that left me affected and quite amazed at the talent that I was seeing. But it's a cracking film. It's a really, really great
I'm never
going
to watch that.
I'm not.
Fair enough.
Never in a million years.
Never.
But hey, but I absolutely enjoyed it. And maybe people out there are going to enjoy
That's
it too.
That's what it's all about.
That's what it's all about. Mm-hmm.
But it sounds jizz.
Awful.
But that's what we all respect here. I've brought shite. And now you have.
No, I don't think so, my darling.
I think it is going to be Poland's entry into the Oscars, isn't it? So, yeah, I'm sure it's
good.
You're not going to watch it?
Definitely not.
Shall we not do it instead of Venom?
Mark our words, we're watching Venom on the next episode, and I'm pretty sure this is going to be better than that.
Venom looks fucking terrible, doesn't it?
It really does.
It looks like a hybrid of Spawn and Ghost Rider.
Do you remember when we said about do you remember when we said about the special effects in Predator?
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, exhibit number two.
Oh, dear. Anywho, let's get back on track.
Ben, are you okay?
I'm all right.
Yeah, right?
I'm all right. So I'm going to finish with something good. And mine is a TV show called Killing Eve. It's a TV show about a dogged MI5 agent played by Sandra Oh, who becomes obsessed with an enigmatic assassin played by Jodie Comer, who in turn becomes obsessed with the woman on her tail. And I say this without hyperbole, it is the best TV show I have seen this year.
Okay.
By a distance.
That's mad.
It's fan-fucking-tastic. It's a drama, it's a thriller, but it's also incredibly funny in parts. The obsessive codependent relationship between the two women has hints of Hannibal Lecter and Will Graham from the Hannibal TV show. If you like that, I think you'll dig this. But the best part of the show is Jodie Comer as the villain, whose name is Villanelle. She is a total psychopath, but she's also a goofy kid. She's like a petulant little kid who throws strops and likes to play dress-up. But she's so fucking funny because she's a silly little kid, even though she's a grown woman. She's hilarious in the role, but also really quite chilling as well because, you know, she's a professional assassin. She is so good that I just want to see her in everything. And I'd never seen her in anything. I'd never heard of Jodie Comer until I watched this show, but she absolutely blew me away. Sandra Oh is amazing as the titular Eve as well. She's a bored spy whose obsession with Villanelle just shakes her out of her humdrum existence. The show was created and written by Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who created and wrote a show called Fleabag that was on British TV a few years back that was excellent. And she also was the voice of the L3 droid in Solo. So she's, you know, she does some weird shit. The show is a production of BBC America, so despite the fact that it's set in Britain, it was actually shown in America back in April, and the critics and viewers went nuts for it. It set records on BBC America. It was nominated for several Emmys. Sandra Oh was nominated for Best Actress. Mm-hmm. Jodie Comer wasn't nominated, which is an absolute fucking travesty because she's amazing. But we've just got it over here in the UK. It's being shown, I believe, on BBC One on Saturday evenings. But the best thing is the BBC have put the whole season on the iPlayer already.
Oh, cool.
So you don't have to watch it week on week. Get in there and binge it. You won't regret it because, as I say, it's the best show of the year.
Fantastic.
And you watch a fuck lot of telly.
I do indeed.
Wow.
Too much in a way.
What's it called? Killing Eve?
Killing Eve,
That sounds good.
Got a lot of nods at the recent Emmys this week too.
Yeah, it did, yeah. Mm. It's superb.
That's good because normally you go to America for your good TV.
Yeah, I mean, it's like an American-British co-production, but it's set in Britain, and Sandra Oh is an American actress, but yeah, it's breathtaking.
That's big words.
Yeah, it is. I think
that's
why
I'm actually going to think about it, because when you said Will Graham and Hannibal, I'm like, yep. And then crime, I'm like, yep. And then it's like, not subtitles, yep. I'm sold.
To try and reduce it to its brass tacks, you could kind of say it's a funny version of Hannibal. But that is, you know, that's reducing it way, way down. But if that drags you in to watch it, it's worth it because it's so good.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Lovely.
So, social media.
On Instagram, Rebecca Wren has said, saw the film Mandy, starring Nicolas Cage as a lumberjack getting revenge after his wife is kidnapped by a cult. He's bonkers as usual, and the film is so beautiful and dark and really violent. Now, that comes out here in a couple of weeks, and I really want to see it. All the reviews say it's amazing.
I'm definitely down for this.
Mm. Yeah, I really want to see it badly. Really badly. Like, I just want to see it now.
Yeah.
But I'll wait.
I think it's the best reviewed Nicolas Cage film in probably a decade.
Shut the front door.
I know.
I'm so excited. I've just heard so much good things about it. Like, the scenes with Nicolas Cage that I've heard are just mind-blowing. He actually gives a shit.
It's always nice to hear.
Yeah.
It's not just a paycheck. Yeah. Really. On Twitter, Robert Lathrop at WildTurkey941 has said, started watching Norm MacDonald Has a Show on Netflix, a half-hour interview show, oddly enjoyable.
Mm. I've seen it, but yeah. I've not really... I remember him being quite big in sort of like the mid-90s for Saturday Night Live.
That's
but
right,
I'm not really... I'm a bit indifferent to him.
Nah, if I want interviews, I go to markandme.com.
Fucking hell.
Jesus Christ. That's three episodes in a row now.
Ridiculous.
Three episodes.
On Facebook, Mark Haywood has said, The Book of Bad Decisions by Clutch. With this album, they continue to do their great job of storytelling with groovy rock.
We saw them at Download
we
a couple
did.
Of years ago.
Yeah, they were pretty good.
I like them. They've got some jive about them and some funk.
Some jive.
They're just decent.
Yeah.
Good band.
I find them a bit samey.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of difference between any of their songs, but I enjoy them. They're all
right. Yeah, they were good live.
Yeah. On Twitter, Jean Parmesan at Salazar's sister.
He got me again!
Salazar's sister said, Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker is a great non-fiction read. It's important that us media-consuming junkies ensure that we still get enough shut-eye. And I looked this up because I didn't know what the hell it was, and it's a best-selling science book about about sleep, and it seems really fascinating to the point where I've actually ordered it on Amazon.
Oh, wow.
Hey.
So well done, Jean. You got me. On Instagram, Ian, a.k.a. Ian STW, has said, Saw Jurassic Park in Glasgow with the Czech National Symphony Orchestra performing the soundtrack live. Definitely worth seeing if it comes near you.
Now, I'm going to see that in November.
Oh, excellent.
I'm going to see that at De Montfort Hall in Leicestershire.
Lovely stuff. Ian wasn't the only person who mentioned this, actually. We had a few people come through with this. Sounds very popular.
Cool.
It's the thing now, isn't it? Get a good film that's classic. Yeah. Stick an orchestra with it. Charge 40 quid a ticket. Mugs buy it.
Mugs.
Not in a bad way, but it's a lot of money. You can just watch it at home with surround sound. But
So, Ian, Mark's just called you a mug.
No, you're not a mug. You're a nice guy. I don't know you, but I do like you.
Christ.
I take it back. I'm talking about Gemma. Yeah,
how to piss off your fan base in one easy stroke.
Why have our downloads gone down so bad? Yeah, I love you all.
On Twitter, Tracy Ross Tucker at Floyd Claypool has said, Stephen King and J.J. Abrams' Castle Rock was amazing. Has that started showing in the UK yet?
I don't know, but somebody has recommended to that for me as well. Really, really, really want to see it.
I read a couple of the reviews on some of the entertainment websites and people are saying it's very good.
Bill Skarsgård in it.
When it comes here, I'll watch them all.
Yeah. Mm. Lindsay Liu at B_my_deputy has said, currently reading the second in a series of Johannes Cabal the Necromancer by Jonathan L. Howard. Dark, witty and mysterious.
Amazing book. One of my favourites of the year.
You bullshitter.
I was going to say, get him to say who wrote the book.
Yeah, one of my favourites.
Because you did a cracking job, Ben, and I would love to hear Mark say it.
No, didn't think so.
We've not got all day. We've got homes to go
that's
to.
True, actually. We've got dignities to keep.
Gemma, this one's for you.
On
Instagram, Darth Punk has said, Matt Berry has an upcoming album called Television Themes, where he's covered the themes from iconic TV shows of the 70s and 80s, such as Rainbow, Are You Being Served, and Doctor Who. A couple of the tracks are on Spotify and sound fantastic.
I'm listening to that on my way home. That's amazing.
Look at that face. That's a gush face.
I can't imagine him doing the rap-esque thing on Are You Being Served?
Well, we'll
going
see.
Down.
Say when you're ready.
And this one's for you, Mark. On Facebook, Richard Watts says, Jaws, Memories from Martha's Vineyard. A stunning book told from the POV of the people of the island and key crew members. Have you got that one?
I've got it in hardback. It's very expensive. It's my most expensive book. £44.
Jesus
what
Christ.
The fuck?
I know, but it's beautiful.
Is it a good read?
I've never opened it because I want to keep it in its seal and be like, oh, it's going to be worth loads. Talking about seal... anyone else want a seal bar?
I don't
bar?
Want a seal bar.
Why didn't I eat someone? They're nice.
They look shit.
Yeah. I don't think I want to join that club.
So snatch up a seal bar. I don't want it.
But no, the book's meant to be beautiful. I bought it because it's Jaws.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah, money well spent.
And then finally on Twitter, Olivia Creighton at Liv Creighton has, she's given us a double bubble here. She said BoJack Horseman season 5 is both hilarious and heart-wrenching, and season 2 of American Vandal is also a must, maybe even better than the first.
Oh, yes.
Now, I have watched season 2 of American Vandal and I have watched season 5 of BoJack Horseman, and I agree with Liv entirely. They're both amazing.
Mm-hmm. The turd burglar. Who would have thunk it?
I thought that season 2 isn't as funny as season 1 of American Vandal, but it's just as good in other ways.
It was really, it kind of kept you on the hook, didn't it? With every single end of the episode, it made you immediately want to watch the next episode following on from that. Absolutely fantastic performance, and I agree. I think it was a lot more serious, but I thought the way how everything tied in together was much more clever than the first season. And as for BoJack Horseman, I want to talk about one episode. Now, I'm not going to reveal any spoilers, but Free Churros.
Yes, Free Churros. I know which episode you're referring to,
That is possibly, now, BoJack is very... very synonymous with being quite dark and quite gut-punching. But I think out of the 5 seasons that has been broadcasted, I think that might be the most upsetting and real effective one. Mm-hmm. But remember, when you are watching BoJack Horseman, you are loved.
Mm-hmm.
You are loved.
Indeed you are. Mark, have you watched either of these seasons yet?
I've watched all of American Vandal in a day.
Yeah.
Good I lad. Found it too easy to do. It's just next, next, next. And you can do that skip intro now, can't you, on there? So
you
it's even better.
Yep.
And I loved it. I thought it was like the production value had gone up. I thought like the editing and stuff. It all looked amazing. The story, I didn't know how you get a good story again after Who Drew the Dicks, and it worked. Everything was great. I loved it all. I've not watched any BoJack Horseman because I think it might upset me. And I don't want to be upset.
It's a very honest show, but I think we need something like this in today's in today's life. It's cracking. It's absolutely amazing.
You love it.
I do. Will Arnett is just the voice of reason, really.
He's excellent. Yeah. Before we move on, have any of you watched Maniac on Netflix
Not yet.
No, but I want to because Emma Stone and your boy.
Jonah Hill.
Jonas. Yeah. I want to see them two so together close. Again. Have you?
Yeah, I'm 2.5 episodes in and I'm loving it so far. Oh. It's weird as fuck.
I think it looks beautiful already. Yeah.
And it's directed by Cary Fukunaga, who is now going to be directing the new Bond movie.
Wow.
And he's an excellent, excellent
director. And it's all up there straight away. It's not one where I have to wait each week.
All 10 episodes ready to watch.
This week sorted.
Yeah. Alrighty then. So please do keep sending in your suggestions for Skip to the Recommend on Twitter at STTE Podcast, facebook.com/SkipToTheEndPodcast, Instagram at SkipToTheEndPodcast, or via email podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. I've really enjoyed today. I say that every week, but I mean it every week.
It's a joy, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
It is, but I'm also a bit sad.
Why?
Because this will be the last episode of our current logo.
Oh, true. I suppose that's true.
My goody ass.
All good things come to an end.
Indeed.
Wow. But, you know, as one door closes, another opens. And that's what we do at Skip to the End. We never rest on our laurels.
Oh, done
yes!
Yes!
Thank you. I took it on board and I put it
into
context and it's made sense.
Oh,
good
mate.
God almighty. So as well as having a new logo, what are we going to be reviewing? What's our main review?
We're going to be reviewing the Tom Hardy latest flick, Venom. I mean, we were talking about the Predator dogs earlier and this looks like it's possibly the same kind of CGI, but... we could be wrong.
I will say this for it. It cannot be worse than the trailers make it look.
Very true.
Which I've not seen, remember. I'm completely in the dark about this. So it could surprise me.
Maybe
I
so.
I really can't wait.
It won't. Mark, what is our topic of conversation?
It goes really well with Venom. Our top 3 rom-coms of all time.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a good one because there is a lot to choose from and we're just going to have fun.
I'm looking forward to it already.
Yeah. And speaking of rom-coms, our rewatch is A Clockwork Orange. Bit of the old in and out.
It is, well...
I'm amazed that we've not done this yet as a rewatch.
I thought we had, and that's why when you announced it, I was like, oh, cool. Like, Ben's fucked up.
I'm really excited about this. It's a classic.
It's going to be tremendously good. Who are we masturbating over, Gemma?
We're going to be masturbating over David O. Russell.
Yes. David O. Russell.
Mm.
He's one of those names that doesn't automatically inspire great things, but then you think back through his back catalogue.
Yeah.
You know, Three Kings, The Fighter, American Hustle, Silver Linings Playbook.
There's a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a fun one, I think. We're going to have the final round of the Act Factor, where it's Mark and I joining up to try and beat me and Gemma.
Is this Team Bark?
Barky
Bark. Barky Bark.
Back once again for the Renegade Masters.
B-Boy Dance with the Ill Behaviour.
Indeed.
We're going to give away lots of stuff as well.
Yeah.
We're going to announce the winner of the Pez Fuck all the other stuff. At the end of the day, probably our cheapest present, but it's a cool present.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's be honest about it. We all like going home and watching him draw those happy trees, don't we? We do.
Yeah.
Giving it away.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
But I always like it as well. You know, when he cleans his brush, he's like, let's just beat the hell out of it. And you know that he's done that to, like, a kid or something in his time.
Well, wow.
He's daddy.
Is he dead?
So
that's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. But he's not. He's the softest, nicest man. He would never harm a child.
He's the gentlest human
being. But it's just that sinister way he looks at the camera and goes, let's just beat the hell out of it. It's a bit scary for someone who's so soft and gentle.
Are you just tarring him with the same brush as Rolf Harris?
Because There we go. We got him in.
Yeah.
Is that all pedo bingo?
I think we've done him house.
That's a house.
Done. Yeah. There you go. We should actually do little PDFs that you can print off.
Pedo Fs.
Yeah. That you print off at home, and when we mention them, you tick them. That'd be good. Fun to play along. We'll do it on the next episode.
Fun for all the family.
Yeah.
Pedo mingle.
Fun for all the family, apart from the grandkids. But yeah. Oh,
Lord.
Oh, God.
Oh, good Lord. More of this shit in 2 weeks.